newly appointed Chicago State Senator Omar Aquino, musician and broadcaster Paris Schutz, and another installment of The Swap Meet. And now here's your host, a man who spent all afternoon looking for a Dwayne Wade Bulls jersey, Justin Kaufman.
I even thought about maybe erasing McDermott. This is too much work. Too much duct tape. Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show lined up for you on this Thursday, this rainy Thursday in Chicago, in the Chicago area. Coming up this hour, we're going to talk with newly appointed State Senator Omar Aquino from the Northwest Side. He's representing the second Senate district in the state of Illinois. And it's interesting because he will become the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. He becomes another millennial who is representing. And the question I guess I have is why? Seems like that would be the last place you would want to go in your early 20s is to Springfield, Illinois, and represent in the state Senate. But we'll talk with Senator Aquino about his political career moving into Springfield politics and what it's going to take to pass a balanced budget in the state of Illinois. That's coming up a little bit later this hour. Also coming up, my guest at the big table, Mark Geary. Mark's great. Mark is an independent comedy producer. I've known him for years. He's been producing in Chicago for, geez, almost about 20 years. He was the man behind the Lincoln Lodge, and a lot of our listeners out there have been to the Lincoln Lodge. It was a great comedy establishment that was in the back of the Lincoln Restaurant. Remember the Lincoln Restaurant, Pete? Great place. And it was a great idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if the restaurant was that great. Mm-hmm. But in the back, they had the Lincoln Lodge, and there were great comedians that used to come through there, including T.J. Miller, Kumail, the cast of Silicon Valley, a lot of comedians who are now, you know, making us laugh on both screens,
mm-hmm.
Had played Lincoln Lodge sometime in their career in the last 15 years. So Mark Geary will be here to talk about what they're doing with the Lincoln Lodge now and also just the key to success on starting and being an independent comedian, not going through the sort of corporate, you know, wheel, doing it yourself. So we'll talk with Mark about that coming up at the big table. 9 o'clock, my guest. I'm very excited about this. Paris Schutz. Paris is the correspondent and fill-in host on Chicago Tonight, Channel 11. And he is also a piano player musician. And he is going to be taking up residency at Davenport's on Milwaukee, Wicker Park, coming up in July, Friday nights in July. So he is bringing his keyboard.
Nice.
And another musician, and we're going to get some live music from Paris Schutz on the show tonight. I'm excited about it. I think that's great. I mean, to be able to balance a life in broadcast news and also in music, it's got to be tough. We'll talk to him about
it. Yeah. Maybe he could come up, you know, I think didn't he write the theme for Chicago Tonight, or
he
composed
it, yeah,
or something?
Yeah.
He can come up one,
I hope, yeah, one for the show,
for
the download.
For the diddly
diddly diddly diddly diddly diddly diddly diddly ding.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Maybe he'll work on it right now. He's probably listening.
He's like,
he'll be prepared.
Man, I was not ready for this. We'll put him on the spot. So you have a new theme song for us? Maybe he can come up with three little jingles, and we can have callers call in and judge.
All right. Get to work.
The jingle jangle. A new segment
like
on the download.
It.
The jingle
like
jangle. I feel like we're really creative lately. We seem to be coming up with a lot of good new segments in theory. Last night and the night before, the new segment, Debatable.
I love it.
That's Debatable. That'd be a great 10 o'clock segment where we take calls just on an issue. Dwayne Wade, Debatable. Not in my mind. I am a huge Dwayne Wade.
I'm still on a high after last night.
I love it. I love it. I mean, just watching him all smooth on Kelly Ripa today. Tall glass of water. I think that's how it's said, right? Tall glass?
Yeah.
Good looking glass
of
water?
Tall drink of water?
Tall drink of water.
Yeah.
Tall drink of water. That's a tall glass of water. That's a tumbler. Also tonight, let's talk a little architecture and what happens when you take two architecture tours, two walking tours downtown, and you meld them together. It's like, as I've been saying in the promo all day, it is like a terracotta bloodbath. Two of Chicago's best tour guides are going to be doing a dueling tour guide called Burnham vs. Sullivan, the Tour of the Century. We'll talk about the tour that's coming up. They're going to be doing it, I think, in a week or so. But we'll talk about, we'll let them argue it out. It'll be like touche for old architects. It's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And then 10 o'clock tonight, it is Thursday, so it's time for Swap Meet. What, this is like Chicago's antique roadshow for Chicago memorabilia. I got this shoe that Matsui once had. Is it worth anything? 312-981-7200.
I'd pay money for a Sui shoe.
A Sui shoe.
Go to number 26.
Greg Flam will be back in studio. And DuPage Picker, which is an offsetting term, but I get it. It's like the sort of American picker kind of thing. But we will talk to him about, he'll bring some new stuff that he found, going to real estate sales and junk sales and estate, all that kind of stuff, right? And hopefully we'll get some good, we had some good ones last week. It really got going. I was like, God, everyone's got a lot of junk.
It's starting to branch out.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting away from the Pope.
I saw the Pope. I have the when the Pope was here in the late 70s. All right. Okay. Next caller, Ray. I saw the Pope. All right. We all saw the Pope. There was a couple weeks where that's all it was about who saw the Pope. But we'll talk with Greg Flam. I'm excited. I mean, there should be some good stuff tonight. Last week, I was really impressed. So that's 312-981-7200. And my favorite part about that segment is how people are starting to get indignant. They're like, they will text or they'll call and be like, so how much is it worth? Greg's like, well, he should probably get some money. How do I get the money? I want the money now. I'm like, that's, we're not authorities.
Yeah.
Greg's great. He's got a great eye for it. He understands the market. He gives you a little bit of encouragement and support and tells you that it's worth pursuing. But he's not going to buy it off of you. Maybe he will, but probably not. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martyr and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll hit up the carryout. We'll get the show started. Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to do the carryout. But let's get an update right now on what's happening in protests around Chicago. There is a march that has taken over the Dan Ryan at 55th and Dan Ryan. It's been marching on and off the expressway. Kathy Cheney is the managing editor of Ebony Magazine. She joins me now. Kathy, where are you at?
I am actually now in the middle of intersection 51st and North Circle. Got a circle blocking off the intersection right in front of the police station.
In front of the police?
Now.
Okay, and what's the plan for the march? What can you tell? Where does the march seem to be heading?
I believe the culmination of the march, they started at 56th. They went down southbound to 55th, went around the other way, and then took over the Dan Ryan southbound side. They came back and marched now just back to the police station. So this may be wrapping up. I'm not sure, though.
Kathy, how many people do you estimate are involved in the march that's happening tonight?
Easily at least 300.
Wow.
It could be more because some others joined, but at least 300 people that were outside as we were marching down the street out of their homes came out, supported. It doesn't seem like too many people that were, you know, stalled on the expressway because of the demonstration were upset. They actually pulled over, stopped, and honked their horns, you know, lifted their fists, and continued in support.
Yeah, when you get to a protest where a protest is blocking an expressway, what is usually the par? I mean, what's part of the course? So you get people that are upset, they're honking, or in this case, you get more support from the people in the cars? Nope. Looks like we lost her. Well, hey, that was great that we had her. Kathy Cheney, she's a managing editor at Ebony Magazine. She is covering the march that is Chicago's call to action after the police shootings in Baton Rouge and in Minnesota. These are marches that are happening all over the country right now. There's one happening in New York City as we speak, and the one in Chicago took over the Dan Ryan Expressway at 55th. But as Kathy just said, they're moving the protest to 61st, I think she said, 61st in front of the police station there, and that's probably where it's going to wrap up. Thanks to Kathy Cheney for joining us tonight. Also, this is crazy news, too. I just saw, and this was on Twitter, Gordon Whitmire was talking about this on Twitter, that a fan fell off the out of the bleachers onto the field during the rain delay at Wrigley.
What about the little basket?
I don't know. Like I said, I'm looking for it.
Actually, guys, I have it,
have it?
Right here,
what
as a matter of fact. A Chicago Scanner retweeting a tweet that was originally put out by Brett Lyons, who is a producer at CSN Chicago. There is a picture of what looks to be, I think, a woman lying face down on the warning track by the ivy. Clearly, she probably fell through that catch netting that they have in the outfield there. But it doesn't look good.
Oh, man. Well, the picture I saw that was this, like they carted, the cart had come to out to attend to her. But, wow. You'd know better because you're a Cubs fan, Pete, but I don't know of any situation where a fan has fallen in from the bleachers onto the field.
Yeah, I can't recall.
Wow. I hope she's okay. That's terrible. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what the
situation is, or
and how dire the injury is, but just the idea of a fall from the bleachers onto the field during the rain delay at Wrigley Field is pretty intense. Wow. Okay. There you go. Something new every night. All right. Why don't we get to the carry out? This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Two big police shootings have rocked the country, one in Baton Rouge, another right outside of St. Paul, Minnesota. Both were shot by police and were African-American. Also, both of the scenes were caught on cell phone cameras. Otherwise, you wonder if we'd even know about it. It's awful, it's unsettling, it's offensive. The Minnesota governor said that the victim would be alive if he were white. Also, last night, closer to home, a four-year-old was caught in gang crossfire on a porch. He's actually shot by a guy on a bike. What are we doing here? I mean, I'm all about the outrage. I get it. Police have power, and if that power is abused in the form of shooting an innocent victim, that has to be dealt with. And frankly, on a bigger level, we have to figure out the relationship between minorities and police officers. But where's the Facebook post expressing outrage over the shooting of a four-year-old Chicagoan? 4 years old. Seriously, not even a meme? Nothing. Come on, we got to figure this out. Moving on, news from the campaign trail has Senator Bernie Sanders set to endorse Secretary Hillary Clinton on Tuesday. Some big news for the Democratic Party. When reached for comment, Senator Bernie Sanders was like, "Hello? Hello? Who's it? Bernie? I'm calling you. No, hang up the phone." An architect has put together renderings of what a Lucas Museum would look like at the South Works, the former steel mill on the southeast side. And he's appealing to George Lucas himself. If Lucas likes it and he takes the offer, can this architect be the new mayor? Mayor-architect or architect-mayor? Either one. It works. The real estate world has spoken, and Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood is officially cool. A new study says that the Northwest Side neighborhood is one of the hippest in the country. Really? Okay, I guess. Where did Buena Park end up? Or East Mayfair? Or South Wrigleyville? No? Didn't make the cut. Six Chicago restaurants were named to Wine Enthusiast's Top 100 Wine Restaurants. Wait, these restaurants serve food? That should be a disqualification. No thanks. Call me a purist. I like my wine restaurants with wine only. No cheese, no bread. I said good day. Good day! In weather, it's summer. That's all I can say. It rained, right? Anything else I should know about? In sports, I'm still reeling about the Dwayne Wade news. He's coming to Chicago. He announced today on Kelly Ripa, although I tuned in late and all they were talking about were Audi belly buttons. But he was damn charming doing it. Yeah, he's old and he doesn't shoot well, but you're nitpicking. Here are my three reasons why Dwayne Wade is awesome for Chicago. Number one, he's referenced in a ton of rap songs. All the hot rappers are making reference to him, even the young ones. So that's pretty cool. Number two, this hurts Pat Riley, and anything that hurts Pat Riley is good by me. And number three, Gabrielle Union. Not only is she a Hollywood actress, but she tweets during games. That's awesome. Move over, Kristen Cavallari. We've got better options. Also, I loved her, and she's all that. The Sox have the day off. They get the Braves tomorrow night, trying to go for six straight series wins before the break. Chris Sale pitches, trying to win 15 games before the All-Star game. That's crazy. And if you do the math, that means he's in line for 30 wins, which won't happen. He'll get like 18 because that's how baseball works. The Cubs have a makeup game with Atlanta tonight. Jason Hamill goes, or as we call him, Ham Jam. The current losing streak for the Cubs means that they aren't the class of the NL anymore. The San Francisco Giants are now the number one team. Two words, Cubs fans. Jeff Samardzija. And finally tonight, a huge slip and slide is being constructed in Uptown. This will be a large-scale version of the childhood water lawn game we love so much. It's a 1,000-foot slide. It's being called a slip and slide, but I like the working title, the homeless bath. That's the carryout for July 7th, 2016. Hey, if you order the burger, we're going to throw in some salt and pepper packets in there for free. You're welcome. Coming up, we're going to talk with new state senator Omar Aquino. He is the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. He was just appointed. We'll talk about taking over the reins on the northwest side of Chicago. Also tonight, Mark Gary's at the big table. Stay with us. Much more. 720 WGN. Going to be a busy news night, but our man is on it. Rob Martier. Yeah, I can't believe that. I mean, I'm interested to see what the damage of or the intent of the injury is for that woman.
I know.
Fell out, just updating real quick. A woman during the rain delay at Wrigley Field fell from the bleachers onto the field, was carted off, you know, obviously with a care in some form. But we don't know what the extent of that injury, but we'll be updating you all night, I guess.
Yeah, we kind of joke around about when people, you know, this happens, but this is pretty serious because that's about 12,
fall.
15 feet
yeah.
fall. I mean, foot fall. I mean, that's not good.
No, that's terrible.
Well, so I hope she's okay, or that person is okay, rather.
All right. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight we'll keep you informed on anything that's happening with the protests on the south side. They just took over the expressway at 55th and the Dan Ryan. But as Kathy Cheney said, looks like they might be wrapping up in front of the police station, 61st Street. We'll keep you updated on that. We'll also keep you updated on the strange freak accident that somebody fell out of the bleachers onto the field during the rain delay. Rob Martier will be all over that. So we will have another news update coming up at the top of the hour. Well, a new state senator is representing the northwest side of Chicago. Omar Aquino actually won his Democratic primary and was appointed early to replace the retiring Senator Willie Delgado. But he missed the big vote. He came in just after that. Aquino represents the 2nd Senate District of Illinois, and he's now the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. He's 29 years old, and he's my guest tonight. Senator Aquino, thanks for being here.
Justin, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You were appointed right after the big vote, the stopgap budget gap, or the vote there. Do you wish you were there for that, or is it good to start fresh?
I'll say I'm not afraid to sort of take any votes. So I missed it because the senator that I replaced, Senator Delgado, had for some time been contemplating when to step down. And so he earlier in the month had decided, you know what, at the end of this month's going to be my time. His wife had retired a month earlier. And so it just ended up happening to be that the stopgap was sort of negotiated and pushed forward within even days prior. Like,
right.
There's a lot of people going down there thinking, nothing's going to happen. And then you heard like a day or two before that leadership was having these meetings with the governor and things were going well. And so, I'm glad that there was a stopgap that was passed. It's not anything that it's, you know, there's no claim to victory here. There's still a lot of issues. It's just a 6-month thing. So it's not a full budget. We still need to work towards that. And so that's what I'm looking forward to be able to do come November. I'm glad that I have a little bit of some I get in there a little bit earlier to kind of get a lay of the land and get to work.
Now, OK, so the way it works, I mean, you won your Democratic primary and in the city of Chicago, that ultimately means you're going to win the general election because there's usually not a Republican challenger, Democrat, and you're already in being appointed. So you kind of have a lay of the land a little bit already understanding as you were gearing up for, you know, taking over in November. What are the things that you wanted to bring to Springfield as a rep in the second or the state senator in the second Senate district?
Well, I mean, I'm what I look at this job as is I have a lot of bosses. Every single person in the Senate, second Senate district, either they vote or they don't vote. They're a stakeholder. They're my boss. So I'm accountable to them. Right. So what I want to do is make sure that I'm working for them. I'm working as hard as I can because the second Senate district is filled with working class families, people that work very hard to earn what they the little that they have. You know, I want to make sure that we're working to have a great public education system, not only in the city, but in the state. And so I'm a big supporter of the elective school board bill. Right now, as much as I have a lot of respect for Senator Kwame Raoul, he said earlier this year that during the summer there was going to be outreach and community meetings and forums. I'm looking to hear when those meetings are because I'm excited to go attend them. But, you know, those are things that I want to make sure that, hey, if we get it done this year, it'd be great to vote on it. I'd be excited to. If not, then I'm going to be bringing up some of those issues with some of my colleagues.
I like it. Going right at him. Going right at Raul. I'll take that.
No. I got a lot of love for Kwame,
man. He's a guest on our show. I like it.
He's a good guy. No, I'm just saying, like, he made a comment.
Yeah, follow through.
Public comment that there's going to be some public hearings, and I know the people in my district certainly want that. I know the people in the city of Chicago absolutely want it. You know, there's a referendum that I think is over 80% of the people in the city that were able to vote on it said, hey, we want to have an elective school board. And it's so ridiculous that in this state, we're the only school district that does not have an elective school board. What is the problem? Like, why is it so hard that we can have more transparency in especially the Chicago public school system? I mean, their previous CEO, Triple B, is going to prison sometime soon. I mean, it's there's oversight and you know, more transparency is definitely needed in that school district.
As I mentioned, I mean, you are the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. You're 29 years old, so that puts you in the millennial category. Yep. When I talk about millennials getting into politics, it's usually surrounded by a study that says they're not. You know, I mean, you get a lot of and I wanted to just sort of get your background. What drew you to public service?
Yeah, so I mean, I dedicated my life to the public sector. I, you know, when I got out of college, both my parents had jobs in the public sector. They were union people. They had worked in the private sector for many years. But once, you know, my mother was a teacher's assistant in the Chicago public school system. My father was a truck driver that ended up working his way up through the ranks in the Department of Streets and Sanitation. So I saw what collective bargaining can actually do to actually give people the ability to live the American dream. And so I want to make sure, especially now, that we have that, you know, right now we have a governor that says, hey, we need to take away people's collective bargaining rights and have a...
Is that why you got into politics, though? Because you knew, like, in the future, Governor Rauner would be trying to take away collective bargaining rights?
No. I was always had a sense of wanting to sort of give back to my community and work for my community. And so I started working as a case manager for a Department of Aging. Why I got into public policy was because of I saw a lot of what the cuts were happening even back then when Governor Quinn was in. They would send memo week to week saying, hey, we're going to make these changes. And I would read the memo and say, there's no way we can implement this because it goes against everything we're trying to do to support these seniors. And so like a week later, they'd say, oh, disregard. We realize we can't actually implement that. But, you know, wait for the next memo. And so I finally got sick and tired and said, you know what? I don't necessarily want to be a policymaker, but I want to be in that room when they're making decisions to say, hey, there's some perspectives you should probably take and know that these numbers and whatnot, they actually are impacting people's lives, people's families and communities.
Yeah, I mean, that's I guess, the American way. I mean, to be able to be in a position where you see what the government's changes are doing or what policies that are being crafted in the state house are affecting people on the ground, to be in that position where you're with the people that are affected on the ground, that ultimately should make you a better lawmaker.
Yeah, I'm going to be taking the experience that I have from my work in the public sector. I mean, after that, I went to work as a legislative aide in the House of Representatives in Illinois. So I saw sort of, as they say, how the sausage was made, and I was a little disgusted by it. So it was one of those things. It's I either was going to get out of politics and say it's not for me, or the opposite, which what happened to me, and said, you know what, I think I can do better. And I'm gonna take a bet on myself, and I'm gonna bet on my community, and take a leap of faith and say, hey, I have some ideas. I have this energy. I've seen how things are done. I want to do it differently, and I want to represent you. And so I did that. And you know, now I sit here as the state senator of the 2nd District because the people in the district said, hey, you're our guy, and we want you to represent us down in Springfield.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about that sausage and how it's made. I mean, you're gonna. I mean, there's one thing to be wide eyed and say, all right, I'm going to change the world, and I'm going to do things for the people on the ground. There's another to play politics in Springfield, which obviously is a longstanding game, the best game in town. State Senator Omar Aquino's in studio with us. He represents the 2nd Senate District. He was just appointed to replace the retiring Senator Willie Delgado. He's the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. He's 29 years old. We'll continue our conversation here. Stay with us. We're getting to know new state senator Omar Aquino. He was appointed earlier this, I guess it was at the end of last month, June, right at the end of June, beginning of July here. He replaced the retiring Senator Willie Delgado in the northwest side of Chicago. Democrat, represents 2nd Senate District of Illinois. He's now the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. He's 29 years old, which technically makes you a millennial. Congrats.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so let's talk about, I kind of, you know, joked about the sausage being made. You mentioned it. But one of the things about Springfield right now is there's a lot of frustration among not just the voters, but lawmakers, that there are only a certain number of people that are involved in the process, whether it be the governor and the two leaders of the House and the Senate, Senator Cullerton, Representative Madigan, Speaker of the House Mike Madigan. For you as a guy coming in, and you already told us you're coming in because you want to make a difference. You saw what the policies in Springfield are doing to the people in your community. How can you make a difference when it feels like there's only three people making the deals?
Sure. I mean, I think there's several things you can take from the stopgap, but I think one of the things was that it came from pressure from members that were not in leadership. And that came because of the pressure from the people in their district. I mean, I had a lot of colleagues and even myself when I went to knock on doors after, you know, I was the Democratic primary nominee. I wasn't the senator yet. And there was people saying, oh, you know, you guys are the problem, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, whoa, I'm not in there just yet. And I know that for my colleagues, they've had a lot of people that they've knocked on doors as well that said, like, they're just frustrated with, you know, with the lack of action in Springfield. And so that got a lot of those that weren't in leadership to say, hey, if it's not going to be the leadership, you know, taking responsibility and the governor, then let's come together with these different working groups and try to push something forward. So I think that leverage into getting sort of the, you know, the stopgap actually passed. You know, the thing is that yes, my district is very Democratic, and the city of Chicago is, but our state is a mixture of a lot of different types of peoples, a lot of different type of districts. And so we need both bicameral, bipartisan, support on things. You know, we have to come together to push our state forward. And right now, unfortunately, we have a governor who doesn't want to do that. He tries to pick apart different sections of the state. I mean, one of the first things he said when talking about the legislation that Andy Menar is trying to push for changing school funding formula,
right.
He said any more money that goes to CPS would be a bailout for Chicago and Chicago Public Schools. And so he went to like Central and Southern Illinois, basically bashing Chicago as if Chicago is not in Illinois and he doesn't represent the people of Chicago. And so that's not what we need. That's not leadership. True leadership is coming together, even with some people that maybe represent people that are very different from your own, you know, district, but coming together and say, hey, the only way we can move this entire state forward and we all come out ahead is coming together and working together.
Well, I mean, that's great. I mean, to work together, and that should be what we're doing down in Springfield, but a lot of times it's not. For you as a young guy coming in to be a state senator, you know, are you prepared to compromise? Are you prepared to let go of some of the things that maybe you ran on in the northwest side in the second? If there's a deal to be made to make a budget work and maybe it pushes a little bit more to the center or more to the right, some of the social issues that, that you ran on in the second? Is that something you're willing to do?
Well, I'll say this. I'm willing to listen and to hear what, you know, what is being proposed. But, you know, I'm not going to vote against my constituency. I'm not going to vote against my district nor my principals. You know, there are certain things that are things that I would never vote against. And for instance, for me, the turnaround agenda, the austerity agenda that Governor Rauner has, that's not negotiable for me. I'm not a supporter of basically anything in there. But I mean, there's certain portions. I would say this: the only thing that I would come to maybe have a discussion of is with the maps of how mm-hmm. they're created. I think independent maps are something to be discussed. But coming from a Latino majority district, and you know, now being one of four Latino senators, there's not that much representation based on the percentage of, you know, not only Latinos, but, you know, African-Americans, other minority groups as well. I mean, next year we're going to celebrate the 100th General Assembly. And for the first time, we're going to have a member in the General Assembly that's Asian. That's Teresa Ma. So it's, you know, there's still a lot of concerns, even with, you know, something like that. Like, people like to say, like, oh, we need independent maps. Sure. But we need to also make sure that we have coverage and we have that our representation reflects our state.
It's interesting. You know, you mentioned the Latino bloc that's being formed in Springfield. I think of the northwest side of Chicago. I think Representative Guzzardi, who's been on this program. Yeah. I also think of Alderman Ramirez Rosa, who's the alderman, the new alderman over on the northwest side. There seems to be a young Latino movement coming out of Chicago. It's based in progressive politics, and we see it. Do you see that? I mean, do you see you and the people that I mentioned getting together and trying to change politics for the better for a younger Latino voter?
Absolutely. I would say this, that both of those gentlemen are good friends of mine. Will, Carlos, and myself, I think one of the things that we also have in common is actually Senator Delgado. Senator Delgado had supported us in each of our races. I ran for alderman initially, and then I ended up running for state senate. He didn't support me then, but he did support me for state senate. But he saw something in us and said, hey, we need to change our politics in Chicago and on the northwest side, and we need new ideas and a fresh perspective. And you said this earlier, Justin, that, you know, not a lot of young people are part of politics. And, you know, I think that, you know, Carlos, myself, and Will embody a new movement of saying, hey, you can actually make a difference in your community. Just get out there. You know, there's a lot of things to be upset about, but use that frustration as fuel to help others in your community to represent well.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating. We could do a whole hour on Northwest side politics.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Commissioner Berrios for years, he's the head of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's been the guy who has run. And it's interesting because a lot of you guys are coming up. And in your case, you had support of Joe Berrios, which Will Guzzardi not, you know,
yeah.
In a different place. But talk about the old guard and what the northwest side of Chicago used to be and what it is now.
So I would say that, you know, one of the things that I think inspired some people that were on different sides of the fence before, especially on the Democratic side, has been our governor. We have this governor we've had Republican governors before, but Governor Rauner is a special type of governor. I mean, when you go in there and basically say, I'm not going to sign a budget for 2 years unless this part of this turnaround agenda is put forth, I mean, everyone's starting to suffer. And we've seen this in the northwest side. You know, in the second district, these cuts aren't theoretical. I mean, these are personal. People have seen the impact for either MAP grants, cuts to services, so forth. So I think what you see is that, you know, in my race, you know, I did have the support of Chairman Berrios. I've also had the support of some pretty progressive people like Commissioner Chuy Garcia and others. And so, but part of that was because Governor Rauner actually tried to play a role in my race. He was supporting my opponent through his Illinois Go PAC
right.
That got so millions of dollars. They spent so much money in our race that they blew the caps. And so my opponent was able to get from certain, you know, wealthy families, you know, tens of thousands of dollars just from a couple families here and there. So I think that, you know, when you have sort of a common foe in the governor, you get some pretty interesting allies.
Yeah. Let me ask you this as we wrap up here. I'm interested because in the last week, we've seen a lot of changes in Chicago, one of which the property tax bill, which a lot of people on the northwest side of Chicago probably got some sticker shock on what was happening to their property tax bill. We've obviously the stopgap budget just happened, but it's only a stopgap. For the northwest side of Chicago, for the second district, I mean, are people are they frustrated with government? Are they looking for change? There's a hope and optimism from your vantage point as a brand new state senator. What are people thinking about in Chicago?
I mean, people are pretty frustrated, absolutely, and there's hardly. I don't know if I can make an argument of why not to be frustrated. What I tell them is I like them, am very frustrated. That's why I decided to run. One of the things is about, you know, especially when your property taxes are going up and so forth, it's just we have to take a look at how we generate revenue in this state. And it's just so regressive. It's not equitable. We need to find ways that we level the playing field, that we make sure that Governor Rauner and his wealthy friends and corporations are paying their fair share. Is that so hard to ask? It's just saying that, you know, if you are a part of this state, either you do business, you live here, you just pay your fair share. And so there has been some proposals for legislation. Unfortunately, they have mm-hmm. died. The millionaire
progressive tax, yeah.
Progressive income tax. But those are things that I'm hoping that, you know, with Will Guzzardi and with others that we can continue to bring up, because, you know, legislation, these things, these bills, it takes sometimes some sessions to actually get through. But I'm optimistic that we can get that done. I know that for the progressive income tax, we have to change our constitution. But people are willing to do these things because, you know, look, I don't think anyone in the second district, you can be in the second, you can be down south somewhere in southern Illinois. No one wants to pay more taxes, yeah. All right? No one wants to pay more taxes. I sure don't want to either. But the thing is that in the situation that we're in, we need revenue. And so my thing is, like, yes, we need revenue, but who are we asking to pay up? You know, who is right now in our state, we're asking those that cannot afford to pay more, we're putting the burden on them. And so what I'm saying is, let's flip that. Let's just make it equitable. Those that can't afford should pay more, and that's it. So,
State Senator Omar Aquino, he is the new representative of the 2nd Senate District of Illinois. He's the youngest Latino to serve in the state Senate. He's 29 years old. We look forward to hearing more from you, Senator Aquino. Thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin.
It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Architecture tours. I should say architecture tour wars. Two architecture tours in Chicago are coming together for like a dueling piano kind of thing. One is about Daniel Burnham. The other is about Louis Sullivan. And they are going to argue. That's what's happening in Chicago in about a week. It's like I've been saying all day. It's like a terracotta bloodbath. And that'll be coming up at 9 o'clock. Both of the tour guides will be in studio to argue about who is a better architect. Great radio. 10 o'clock, we will do Swap Meet. It's, of course, our Chicago Antique Roadshow, where we evaluate the worth of useless Chicago memorabilia. how much for the wristband that Brad Muster from the Chicago Bears threw at a fan in 1989? That's not on there. We'll get something like that tonight. 312-981-7200. Greg Flam will be here. We will do that at 10. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is an independent comedy producer. Mark Geary has been behind some of the best Chicago comedy showcases of all time, including his work at the Lincoln Lodge, a club in the back of the Lincoln Restaurant on Lincoln Avenue. The famed Lincoln Restaurant closed back in 2014, but Mark's still producing shows, including one at Subterranean Wicker Park. But Mark's looking for a permanent space. Before that, Geary was one of the men behind the Chicago Comedy Festival. He's been at the helm of Chicago comedy operations and projects for over 15 years, and he's my guest tonight at the big table. Mark Geary, good to see you.
Good evening. How are you?
Good, man. Good to have you here. So let's talk about the Lincoln Lodge, because that was a big story here in Chicago when that restaurant closed, and it was a lot about the nostalgia of the restaurant, but really for comedy, for comedians and comedy fans, it was a death of something that really became great in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the venue kind of went with the show. The guy who actually thought of it, Tom Lawler, found the restaurant through banjos playing in the back if you remember, there was a banjo club. People would walk in and, you know, the sound of banjos. And we were like, this is where comedy belongs, out on the fringes. You probably remember the league. What were they called? The League of Debaters or whatever.
Yeah, right. They had like a group.
And it was the perfect setting. Yeah. It was so Chicago, and we wanted the show to be Chicago. So
talk about, you know, obviously since that time, since the place closed down in 2014, you've kept the Lincoln Lodge as a showcase, but you've moved it. Now you're in Wicker Park at Subterranean, which is an entirely different neighborhood and different venue.
Yeah, I mean, that was a risk. We obviously, you know, everyone knows Bucktown to be the sort of hipster art center of Chicago. So a lot of people over the years had struggled to build an audience there. Comedy shows had come and gone. And we were like, oh, it's kind of risky, but it should work. And we went in with Subterranean, and it was awesome because we gave them a list of, like, here's what it is going to take for this to work. And we went through the list, tick, 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 tick. Yes,
like,
this
what kind
is
of stuff?
Work.
Like the...
Just, you know, environmental things like, hey, we got to have someone distributing booze. And we've got to do, we've got to be able to charge at the door. And just things that you think, that there's.
Most comedians aren't thinking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you are.
But we're thinking ahead of the game. So we go in there and we tick off all this stuff on the list. And we know there's going to be a ska band pumping through the roof every night. But you know what? We can noise damp. Once we're full, they're full, it'll all be good. And you're in a place, you know, the Lincoln restaurant was great, but when you walked out on the Lincoln Avenue at night, you felt like, wow, I'm in the wasteland. When you walk out onto North Avenue on a Friday night, you're like, I'm in it. And it just gets everyone excited.
I always thought about that, especially in Bucktown Wicker Park, about comedy, that there should be more. And you've seen some theaters that have set up shop there. I know the Den Theater. There's some other places that are in that area. But I always thought that comedy should set up shop in Wicker Park. It's perfect for it.
Yeah, everything. I don't know why. I never really spoke. I mean, I know Hannibal Buress had a show there. Now, if anyone's going to make it work, it's the crown prince of Chicago comedy. But it had just been over the years. No one had made it stick for whatever reason. I think that, you know, the Immaculately Hip are a little too clever for comedy, I want to say. I don't want to run anyone down, you know, with an Arcade Fire t-shirt. But that's the only thing I could think was they weren't being served what they wanted.
So why, I mean, if you're having success with Subterranean, why search for a permanent location? I mean, you seem to have figured out that maybe there's something there in Wicker Park, so why look for something that's a little bit more permanent?
Well, I mean, Subterranean have been awesome. They ticked everything off the list. But then there's this little anecdote that I've got to spin. And what happened was within a month of moving there, we had a visit from a city inspector who said that a complaint had been lodged about Subterranean presenting comedy. Now, they said, well, you know, we do 7 punk bands a week here. It can't
You're
be...
You're worried about comedy.
Yeah,
right?
It's not environmental damage. But what it happened to be was an old zoning loophole where their license wasn't for comedy, didn't include comedy. It includes all aspects of music and dance and whatever, but not comedy. And so effectively that torpedoed us because now we can't charge a cover. We can only do donations. And we all know how great donations go at the door, right? So, you know, it ruined that, and it ruined our ability to connect with our alumni and do bigger shows. And without that, we have, you know, at one point for a not-for-profit, and this is what people always forget, we kind of are victims of our own success. We're a not-for-profit, not a comedy club. This is a bunch of yahoos doing it for the fun.
Well, let's take a break and talk about that, because I want to get at the philosophy behind the Lincoln Lodge and your personal philosophy about comedy, because it's interesting. And you talk about some of that alumni. I mean, Hannibal Buress, you mentioned T.J. Miller. You know, there's some great Chicago comedians that came through Lincoln Lodge that were ensemble members that have become, you know, the people that we do, that are appointment television, appointment movies. I mean, you've seen these comedians become something. So we'll talk with Mark Gary some more about the Chicago comedy scene and going your own way and doing it for the fun of it here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin, my guest at the big table, Mark Geary. He's a longtime Chicago comedy producer. He's the man behind Lincoln Lodge, a not-for-profit comedy ensemble, really, that came from the back of the Lincoln restaurant but survived and continues to thrive right now at the Subterranean. It was a Friday night, Saturday night?
Friday nights at 8.
Yeah. And also looking for a permanent space to continue the model. A model in which is not usually how comedy works. When you're talking about not-for-profits that are just doing it for fun, that's not usually how a comedy club slash ensemble is born.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't even incorporate as a not-for-profit. They're not thinking of the mission, but we kind of realized, like, well, this isn't going to be a for-profit. We're putting the not in not-for-profit big time. And we just decided, you know, we're going to invest in the people in the long term by giving it some structure. So one of the first things we realized was we needed to call it a cast of comedians and invest heavily when in that group of talent. When we first started the show, we kind of went in with a democratic, everyone gets a shot kind of thing, and the show was a disaster. I mean, it was terrible. I'm not gonna lie. We once had a drunken Santa Claus tackle another act on stage from behind the curtain, and that's the sort of thing that was going on every week.
What you mean is that you're giving every you're filling not unlike we see at comedy clubs where there's five performers on a night or three and you're having to book that or someone's booking that, but with an ensemble that changes where you can use the ensemble and they can get better and they can grow together.
Exactly. You're investing more time in less people, but that ownership transfers into an immediacy of, oh, this is our thing. Let's get this thing good. And, you know, after a year and a half of pretty much disastrous, people would come see the show and never come back. We made that key change through, kind of sorted the wheat from the chaff, as it were. And then we just took off on this tear where we were posting double-digit increases every year in audience. And now, this is going to sound real big-headed, but you see a successful show in Chicago, that model is just eminently repeatable.
Yep.
Get the performers as a core, invest heavily in that core, and they will respond.
What got you interested in doing this? I mean, you came to Chicago in the late 90s. The goal to start a comedy ensemble, to be more of a producer? What was in your head when you started doing comedy here?
Well, I started doing comedy as a stand-up just for myself. That just came about from writing things down and realizing, oh, it's something I should have done, you know? I started an open mic first because the open mics were so terrible, and my ego is such that I'm like, I'm going to show people how this is done right. So I started an open mic, and that ran good for a couple of years. We had some great people coming out of that. Kyle Kinane walked in as this 21-year-old kid. Blair Butler walked in as a 21-year-old. And then a guy called Tom Lawler approached me. He'd found the Lincoln restaurant. Well, not found the Lincoln restaurant. It was there, but he realized, oh, this is a gold mine. This is where comedy belongs. And we teamed up.
Let's talk about what makes... let's do both. What makes a good mic and what makes a bad open mic? I mean, that for you to say, you know, you saw that there was just terrible open mics happening in stand-up in the late 90s. Yeah. What does that mean for the person listening at WGN Radio? What differentiates the two?
Well, comedy needs a good environment. It needs total focus on the performer. So it needs all the TVs off. It needs lights that point a spotlight at the performer. It needs not the stage to be next to the toilet so everyone is filing by. Just some real basic things. And then really encouragement of people. One of the things that I realized soon was, well, if you have three terrible comedians to start the open mic, whoever is donating their time to sit and watch is going to walk. So get the good ones up first.
That's interesting because a lot of open mics are done by sign-up sheets or, you know, and that kind of thing. But you're saying as a producer, as someone who's going to put together an open mic, you really do have to think about how the audience's experience.
You have to think about the audience experience from beginning to end of any show, obviously. You know, the thing that I love about stand-up is people in a room and just getting people into a room to watch live theater now is, you know yourself, it's like pulling teeth. So you want to do it as best as you can to reward those people and thank them and say thank you for sitting here and not watching some terrible thing on Netflix instead watching this terrible open mic.
So, I mean, as you made the experience your own, what were some of the things that you did to make a better comedy show? I mean, obviously the basics that you just talked about, the idea of you know, putting the lights on the stage and not having a toilet by the stage, if we get that. But what was it about a Mark Garry joint, if you will, that takes the open mic or at least the comedy show a step further?
I mean, you know, the glory to me of independent comedy. So let's talk about independent comedy, right? Mm-hmm. So you know what independent music is. You know what independent film is. Independent comedy is in the same vein. To me, the glory of independent comedy is you are the outsider with no resource and you're expected to fail. This is what I tell the cast. They're expecting us to fail because by rights we should. Let's not only not fail, let's over-deliver, right? So every aspect of people walking into a room, you know, at shows we have, I started off doing a pre-show slideshow where I would show these crazy Kodak slides from the 70s because someone's in the room, right? They're sitting, drinking mm-hmm. their beer, waiting for it to start. Okay, let's do that. Let's over-deliver at every single thing that you can do. And you can do that in any show, just with a little bit of money and a little bit of thought. So that's really
sometimes
all it is.
Sometimes thought more than money. I mean, I think it's so interesting, Mark, because our time together, we knew each other in the late 90s. We're both yeah. coming up around the same time. But to watch now, I mean, to see how many improv shows or stand-up shows or showcases or ensembles are happening in the back of bars. They're yeah. happening, you know, like any space has become in this city a place to show yeah. comedy. But so many times, people aren't thinking of the basic stuff that you're mentioning here.
Yeah, and you know, that's a shame because they're going to fail. And like I say, the glory is in not failing.
And they could be super funny. I mean, they could be, they might have great talent, but there's more than that when you're putting up an actual show.
Yeah, and you really need to sit down. There's so much more. Manage expectations. Nothing annoys a bar owner more than you walking in and going, I'm going to make you $500 a week. And it's like, no, you're not. Maybe you might do in a year's time, but for now, you're just going to annoy their regulars. Tell them that, you know, but spell out the rewards. Think about it. That's really all. That's not revolutionary, thinking about what you're going to do, you know, and trying to over-deliver. The thing that I love most in Lincoln Lodge history was one day I walk in, it's this diner with, you know, like just old people sitting in there, and no one could believe, like, what? This is the hub of independent comedy right now? And I walk in and there's a line coming out of the room to get in. And I walk up behind these two young, like, Linkin Park ladies, you know, they clearly don't belong in this venue. And the one turns to the other as they walk in the room and see this mass, seething mass excited about comedy, turns to a friend. I can't say what she actually said, but she said, this is crazy. And I was like, oh, I wish I could put that on a flyer. I beamed from ear to ear that night. That's what we wanted to give them.
Well, let's, you know, it's interesting because I want to continue the conversation about independent comedy because you mentioned that and you called it out. And it is true. There is an independent spirit in this town. And it is similar when you talk about music or film or other right. things. If you're the independent and there's a lot of independent comedy out there, who's the mainstream? Are we talking about Zanies, Second City? Who is the mainstream comedy that would represent the Sony Musics or the things
yeah,
like that?
I mean, you know, it's people with the money to do what they want and the resource. Now, I want to be clear, they're not the bad guys. Like, there's a ecosystem to comedy, right? It's the job of the open mics to get people on stage. It's the job of the showcase, the independent rooms, to put them in front of an audience. It's the job of the comedy clubs to to popularize that art. So they all have their own niche or whatever. But yeah, when I talk about independent, I'm talking about, you know, performers doing it themselves with maybe limited resource, limited money or whatever, as opposed to a business transaction, right, which is you give me money, I give you money, you give me laughs. That's the comedy club.
Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back, and I'm fascinated on the sort of philosophy and ethos of an independent comedian, and for you as a producer of having to nurture and almost teach up some comedians in town about what it means to be a comedian and not worry about the money and to actually work on your stagecraft. Mark Geary's in studio with me. He's a longtime producer here in Chicago. He's a man behind the Lincoln Lodge. He also had we should talk at some point about the Chicago Comedy Festival, which was a great festival here in town 15, 20 years ago. We'll continue our conversation with Mark after the news. Stay with us. All right. We're going to continue our conversation with Mark Geary. Tonight's commercials and promos are short. That was 10 seconds.
You can't sell promos around independent comedy.
I was leaning back in my chair.
Sports, Justin. Talk about sports. The advertisers.
I think
will
we
be
do. Rob Martier and I. We'll do a whole. We'll do a. Sorry, 90 seconds on Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah wrote a nice little editorial to the Tribune.
Did
about
he?
How Chicago is his home.
Well, good.
And then I thought about it. I was like, it's so interesting that Dwayne Wade has completely made us forget about Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose like in a day. There you go. Sorry. Who? That's what I said when I read that. Who? Is your town Joakim? Oh, all right. Cool. All right. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with until 11 o'clock tonight. Mark Geary's my guest. He's the longtime producer in Chicago, the Lincoln Lodge. Also, he had a hand in the Chicago Comedy Festival, which is here. We're talking about independent comedy. And producing and also philosophy and ethos, what it takes to make it here in town, because it's not really about money. When you're a stand-up comedian in Chicago, there's not many places that's cashing checks.
Right. I mean, actually, it's way better now. You've got a couple of clubs. And in fact, that's the real sea change that we've seen, is that once that pipeline of comedy talent just opened in Chicago for stand-up. I mean, obviously, people have always come here to do improv, but now all of a sudden you've got people coming here to do stand-up.
So they're coming from other places around the country to be a part of the Chicago stand-up scene.
Absolutely. The first time we did a cast call for the Lincoln Lodge, and when we opened it up, I had people come in and saying, we came because of the Lincoln Lodge, because Lincoln Lodge had TJ Miller and Kumail Nanjiani. And I'm like, you're a kid from Ohio. How do you know this? You know, because I'm an old man. I'm unaware of the internet in 2008. So, you know, people are now coming and going, oh, yeah, Chicago is where you can get good at stand-up as well.
I mean, that's amazing to think about, because we know people come here. But, I mean, obviously, you know, Chicago's stand-up comedy scene has had a great decade. I mean, there are times when you'll have the downtown scene where – you know, we think about all the clubs that were downtown, but, you know, there, I mean, the late 90s, it was a sketch improv dominated town.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like I think I was saying earlier, comedy clubs aren't really about creating talent so much as monetizing the talent once it is there. So the thing that drove me nuts as a stand-up while I was doing it was, I could perform in the back of a bar on a Tuesday night mainly, but I'm a Chicago comedian. Why can't I perform in Chicago on a Friday, on a Saturday? And that was one of our drivers for being like, no, Chicago comedians should get stage time in their own town, at least. So, you know, the independent scene is very different. Obviously, it's about nurturing. There's not really any money to be had there, but there is a lot of eyes on Chicago now.
Well, you mentioned that the ecosystem, which is really interesting to me, the idea that the you know, you have the independent the ensembles about getting people identifying the talent, and you've got the places like Lincoln Lodge are getting people in front of an audience, and then you've got the comedy clubs which are monetizing and popularizing the comics, and then they're on their way to New York or the coast or LA.
Right.
But for where you've been in sort of identifying talent and establishing an ensemble, you've got a lot of stand-up comedians who are coming in here are pretty raw. When we talk about nurturing talent, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, our philosophy isn't we're not going to tell them how to be a comedian so much as we're going to tell them how to be a person, more or less, because you can pull this human being in, but the human being is a mess. The comedian is not going to emerge from it. So when we recruit, everyone thinks when we do a cast call, we just finished a cast call for the Lincoln Lodge, and everyone thinks we just basically rank the names in how good they are comedically, draw a line under it. That is not what we're looking for as an independent producer. We're looking for potential of growth. We're looking for the people who are going to come to a team aspect. That, to us, is more important. And we can work with the person. A good example, everyone talks TJ Miller, right? He's the biggest thing to the biggest star, him and Hannibal, that came out. The second I met TJ Miller, I didn't even need to know how good he was as a comedian. I knew he was going to make it from the first words that came out of his mouth.
What about TJ got your attention?
The first words out of his mouth of, have you read this book called Standing Room Only? It tells you how to fill a room with no resource. That's the first word. I'll give you a TJ anecdote. I'll try and make this one quick, promise. We're flying outside the L's. This is late 90s. Minus 20 degrees. Whenever you ask, who wants to come fly outside the L's at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday morning? The hands fly up, of course.
Of course.
TJ's always the first hand. I meet him at Belmont. He's got one of those neck braces on. Not the solid one, but the foamy thing. And I go to him, dude, you can't be flying in minus 10 degrees with a neck that is not capable of holding your head upright. He just says to me, rigid neck, nah, dude, I'm good. And I'm a terrible flyer. I'm like so shy, like, please take a flyer. TJ's good anyway, but with this neck brace on, it's just flying out. We get to the end of our flying shift. I say to TJ, all right, we've done the quota, let's get out of here. He bends down, takes off the neck collar, and I say to him, is your neck not damaged? And he just winked at me and walked away. And at that point, you know, this is someone who thinks, who won't take a flyer from a guy in a neck brace?
But there's something to that. There's something to the even being able to extract performance from the duty of doing comedy or booking a room.
You can know, you look at the commitment level. I mean, there's another thing I always tell comedians, right? You're going to put comedian on your resume, yeah? Well, I'm an IT professional. How do I know that? Because every day I bill 8 hours as IT work. So how many hours do you put in as a comedian every day? Yeah, you're sitting in the back of the coffee shop plotting revolution and tearing down the institutions, but, well, how many hours performing, how many hours writing, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Sum them all up and then tell me you can write comedian on your resume.
Oh, that's so interesting. What makes it, I mean, for you and being in this position, I mean, you as a producer, you know, what makes a good comedian? I mean, I know it's a wide open question. There's a lot of different styles, things of that nature. But what is it that you, in your mind, makes a comedian good?
It's a marriage of what you want to say to how you want to say it. When you see a comedian that maybe isn't as good, one of those things might be slightly off. So they're not saying the thing they want to say, or they're not saying the thing that they want to say in the correct way in their voice. The funny thing is with comedians, everyone thinks, oh, it's just this gradual process. Virtually every comedian I've seen that was terrible and good, it was flick of a switch overnight. It was an epiphany. No, I was racking my brain today. Like, who have I seen sort of gradually get good? Not many people. I mean, some come out of the box like a TJ or a Kyle Kinane, where you just instantly know they have their voice. They're just going to work on the material and they'll be great. But a lot of them who have not been good and gone to be great, I mean, you've probably heard this story a million times. Hannibal Buress had a notorious reputation for being terrible. Everyone's got their Hannibal was terrible story on the Chicago comedy scene. And everyone knows Hannibal is king of not only Chicago comedy, but probably American comedy now. But there was an epiphany at some point. where his voice matched what he was saying or whatever. I mean, maybe Hannibal would disagree and take me down Cosby style, but you know, everyone's got that story, and that's really what you're looking for, is the marriage of what you want to say and how you want to say it.
I mean, there is something to be said about repetition. There is something to be said about the practice of getting back on stage and getting back on stage. But you're right. If the switch has not been flipped, and you're not in a position where you're matching what you want to say with how you want to say it,
I get mad at sometimes about people who say, you know, I've got to habitually go to open mics and do the same thing over and over. It's like that old cliche, the definition of madness is doing the same thing and not changing. Okay, you're doing the same jokes in the same voice in a different place. No, you ain't figuring it out, Sonny. You know, let's see some new jokes that are maybe what you want to say changing, or let's see you make a sea change on how you're delivering things.
Well, okay, so let's say there's some kids listening right now, WGN Radio, kid down in a basement, and he's like, this is comedy school for me.
Yeah.
You know, and 16, 17 years old, and they think they're funny, they have something they want to say. What do you recommend? I mean, do you recommend them hitting mics in Chicago? Do you recommend them coming up with a tight 10? Like, what is the first step to being a stand-up comedian?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of crystallizing what you want to say. Most people start off with a book full of post-it notes like, beagles are funny, I don't like traffic, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but that's just mind salad. I don't know, I can't even think of the word. You know, and it's like, okay, well, what do you want to talk about? Or like, what's the main thing? And then concentrate on that. Okay. There's some real basic stuff. Most comedians will tell you comedy can't be learnt. And I tell them, get off stage then, because if you're not learning, then what are you doing? There are things that you can do, for instance. You know how everyone's got the funny friend at the park? Oh, that guy's the cut-up or whatever. Right, but it's like, okay, tell me what he's going to say and tell me the points at which I laugh. And if you can't point to a full stop or a comma where I laugh, I'm not going to laugh, am I? So there's some real basic toolkit stuff. You know, when I was learning, I was terrible for a year and a half and getting nowhere. It took me to see a good show and realize, again, an epiphany, you know, of, oh, everything I'm doing is wrong. These guys do it right. I should be more like them.
Yeah, right.
Not copy what they're saying, but copy the way they're doing it.
Or understand what it takes. When you see someone put a good show on, you're like, to understand there's more than just the jokes they're telling.
Yeah.
There's something to it. Yeah. Mark Geary's in studio with me. We'll take a quick break here. We'll continue our conversation at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Mark Geary. He is the man behind the Lincoln Lodge, the great comedy ensemble that's been performing in Chicago for 15 plus years?
17
years, yeah. You can find out all the information about the Lincoln Lodge at thelincolnlodge.com. Mark also teaches classes there. There's a lot that goes into the independent comedy scene here in Chicago. Mark's a big part of that. You know, it's interesting because to hear you say that the Chicago stand-up comedy scene has exploded over the last decade, I'm always interested in why someone would choose to come to Chicago to do stand-up when they could go to L.A. or they could go to New York. And they seem to be, those markets seem to be almost tailor-made, wired for the end game, which is to make money, to get on television, to be a star. Why do people come to Chicago?
Well, a lot of them are coming, you know, for the improv magnet. So a lot of stand-ups kind of spin out of the improv circus, as it were. So they've come, you know, for the Second City, for the I.O. experience anyway. But a lot of people, like I say, now Chicago has this reputation of we've figured out, the independent scene has figured out how to nurture and support. Because a lot of the comedians aren't even going through the clubs now coming out of Chicago. They're just coming in, getting into the showcases, maybe doing a little bit of club work,
right,
and then heading out.
Right.
The reason to do it in Chicago is, you know, if you're in a room in LA or New York, there is every, I guess it's a two-edged sword. There's a danger and there's a greatness that the guy from Comedy Central or the gal who books whatever NBC show might just walk into that room that
right.
night. You should not get caught doing 10 minutes of improvised genius that may or may not work in front of that person, because they're fickle. They will not see you three times. They will
right.
see you once and make a determination.
And I mean, because you always hear about, you know, the there was a wish and a hope, and I know you've been a part of that, about trying to get the industry to come to Chicago, to make more stops than, say, Lorne Michaels at SNL to just show up at Second City. There, you know, you want to get more of the networks and the all the comedy producers to come check out the scene in the scene.
Well, I want it on our terms, though, like everything in this life. I want it on our terms. I mean, we did a couple of events a little bit a while ago now where we were approached by an LA agency who said, we want to see the best 30 comics, you know, on the Chicago North Side. Can you make that happen? So we did, but I told them, I'm going to invite a whole bunch of industry that I know for this. And when they came in, they were all saying, you guys need to do a festival. And I'm like, I'm not doing another festival. I died on that rack 10 years ago, you know, but they will come if you tell them we have the talent. So I don't think it's out of our reach.
So if you tell them, hey, come on to Chicago, I want to show you these comics, they're at least open to that idea.
Oh, they're more than open to it. They are dying for that because they see the same people every week in LA and New York. You're going to give them someone no one else has seen yet?
Mm-hmm.
That's their gold mine.
Let's talk about, I mean, you talked festivals. I mean, Chicago has seen a lot of comedy festivals over the years. I think Just for Laughs was just here.
Yeah.
Now we see the Comedy Exposition. The
yeah.
AV Club does something
yeah.
In the beginning of the summer. Talk about the Chicago Comedy Festival, because it had sketch comedy as well, but it was a stand-up showcase, you know, and it attracted a lot of industry back in the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, that was run by a guy called Dan Carlson, who is now at Zany's, so still on the scene. Yeah, that was our first kind of stab at it. I mean, I was making good IT money at the time, so I was fisting that over. Yeah, let's get all these people in town. And, you know, we had some other backers. And, I mean, you look at that festival,
yeah.
that ad, I remember fetching Sarah Silverman from the airport in my 10-year-old Ford Escort with the exhaust hanging off, you know. Now it would have to be a gold-plated Rolls Royce, right?
Yeah, all those comedians were at the time, yeah.
You met these people, Sarah Silverman, Patton Oswalt, Daniel Tosh,
Doug Stanhope was on it. Yeah.
I mean, you look at it and you're like, okay, those guys were wandering around like clowns, spending big money and not recouping it. But man, they had their finger on the pulse of where comedy was headed.
What's the difficulty of putting a festival on? I mean, give us the scoop.
The difficulty is, can you treat the comedians ethically and lose money, or treat them non-ethically and make money?
Right.
That's it. End of. There's a reason in the comedy community people are either spitting fire or crawling on their knees to a festival. It depends the position they're in. I think Doug Stanhope wrote a very good kind of piece about what he thought of JFL. But you know what? I've been inside the numbers, and you can't fly people in and put them in hotels
right.
for an audience of 40, and it's going to work.
That's really, there's a little bit of a disruption when it comes to comedians and festivals, because festivals are going to charge big money, but a lot of that money doesn't get back to the comedians because you just
very
can't,
little
yeah.
of it. Very little of it. And I get into it with comedians all the time. Here's my favorite comedian thing. I need to be paid. I need to be paid. I need to be paid. I'm flying myself to Portland next week. It's going to cost me about $700. Are you going to be paid? No. Why are you going then? I'll spend 2 days drunk in Portland. It'll be the best weekend of the year. Okay, please stop saying you want to be paid then, because your
yeah,
actions
right.
have no integrity.
Is there any, I mean, integrity is an interesting word when, I mean, because, it, you know, you talk about integrity.
A rare word.
Yeah, but it, I mean, it's, you talk about integrity of the work. You can talk about yeah. integrity of, of the process. You can talk about integrity of the business, the industry. Yeah. I mean, that is a word that sometimes gets bent around the edges when it comes to comedy.
And that's actually, I mean, if you said to me, give me one word for the Lincoln Lodge, it would be integrity. I hammer that into our performers like the old man that I am. We have to have integrity because that's the basis. It doesn't matter if you offer to pay someone $200 or $20. It better be the amount that you agreed. If it's 20, that's fine. It's still integrity to give mm-hmm, them that. Mm-hmm. And so entertainment is very vexing to me in terms of integrity because as you're trying to coach a performer, please have integrity. Don't just have it integrity in what you say on stage. Have it integrity in your actions. When you say you will be at this show at this time
right.
and do this, you will do it.
And that's an issue. I mean, I mean, because a lot of comedians treat it casual because it's a very casual on the surface. It seems like a casual thing. You can grab a mic coming up. I might show up. I might not.
Yeah, and it's not acceptable. I mean, if you're committed to it, you're going to get mad at people who lack integrity. If you're not going to come, tell me or whatever. You know, that's the key. And the problem is, obviously, entertainment industry famously not big on integrity.
No, it's just not enforced. It's not encouraged.
Yeah, you know, you get a booker may cancel on a comedian last minute because this new headliner is now available. Mm-hmm. And now this comedian has no money for the week because they can't rebook a showcase, you know, a show in 2 days. What is the message?
Not to mention the industry around comedians, agents and managers, where they're maybe thinking about their best interest as opposed to their client. Not to mention the kind of work that a comedian does. I mean, you know what they do with their content.
And it's, you know, one of the things we try and explain to people is, integrity may not get you as far in an industry, but it will make you a happier human being. And that's part of what we're trying to do like not just be a comedian, be a happy human being.
it's
set that as your baseline.
Full circle, right? That's what we talked about at the beginning of this. As we wrap up, you know, I'm interested in, you know, your take on the city of Chicago as a town for comedy, both for how, you know, how it is for comedians, but also, you know, how it is to live here as a comedian.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, I love Chicago. I'm wedded to the town. Love it or hate it. You know, sometimes it drives me insane. It's an awesome place to live. That's point one. Point two is, yeah, you will not make money in a career as a comedian here. You will have to go to L.A. to do that. Not even New York. You will have to go to L.A. But if you want to develop in the perfect Petri dish, you've got the biggest market, but with the most artistic freedom, and that, as a performer, is gold.
If you had your way, and the Lincoln Lodge could come full circle and have a permanent space, where would you want it? I mean, if you had any neighborhood to choose from in the city of Chicago to bring Lincoln Lodge its own space, do you have a preference?
No, not particularly. I mean, we're dealing with our audience, you know, arrives on their fixed gear racer and the L and all that stuff. So we have looked at some spaces and they've all been like, how do people physically get here? What I love about the original venue was just it didn't belong there. It was so incongruous. And I would love it to be, I don't want, you know, brushed aluminium and teak wood bars and stuff. I want it to be something where you feel like, hey, I'm on the inside here of something that is succeeding and not meant to be.
Manage expectations and over-deliver.
Every time.
Love it. Mark Gary, he's a longtime producer, comedy producer here in town, the man behind the Lincoln Lodge, which is at Subterranean Friday nights at 8 o'clock, looking for a permanent space. You can find out more about what they're doing at LincolnLodge.com. Mark, thanks for being my guest tonight.
The Lincoln Lodge.
The Lincoln Lodge. The Lincoln Lodge.com is probably something different.
Sure.
All right, thanks for being here, man. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Before we get to Parachutes, who's in studio, let's go to Rob Martyr. What's up, Rob?
Yeah, Justin, real quick, of course, protests going on here in Chicago and across the country because of the two black men that were shot this week by police officers in separate incidents. Right now in Dallas, protesters are marching through the streets there, and there are reports of shots fired. So everybody is kind of mobilizing in that section of Dallas right now. So we'll keep you up to date on that continuing story.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Thanks. We'll have another news update coming up here at the bottom of the hour at 9:30, and we will continue to keep tabs on that story. All right, my next guest is setting up shop with a residency at Davenport's on Milwaukee. Parachutes is a piano player and a vocalist who dabbles in the news.
Yeah, every time I get a chance, you know, it's a honeymoon thing.
He's a reporter and a fill-in host on Channel 11's Chicago Tonight. He grew up in Chicago, and you can check out his EP, The Terminal EP. Paris is in studio with me. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Hey, thanks, Justin. It's great to be here. Thanks. The Terminal EP is about 8 years old, but it's the last recorded material that I have. You know, time goes by when.
Well, when you're putting on a suit and doing daily news, but you know, I've known you as a producer and a correspondent at Channel 11 for years.
Right.
Where does the music come from?
Well, I've been playing since I was 5 or 6. I was classically trained, and I hated every minute of it. my parents had to throw me in the car to go to lessons. I mean, I loved it. I did, but it was torture to practice and to play, you know, Bach and Mozart and Beethoven and Chopin and all that stuff. And I was about to give it up in high school, and I had a crush on a girl. And I was like, what can I do? What can I do? Well, I'm too shy to talk to her, so I can sit down at this piano and just start, you know, playing around with it. So that's when I first started to really love the piano, right when I was about to give it up. And the first, I can remember the first tune I wrote, it was this like unrequited love song called Lonely Crescent Moon, where like the moon was a metaphor for how I was feeling, like full moon, then half moon, then crescent moon, you know,
for
a 15-year-old, lovelorn, young Catholic schoolboy. I mean, it was profound. So that's where the music comes from, and I've been doing it ever since. I did it through college. I've done it through you know, working at Channel 11, just doing it on the side. But you know, I try to keep it up and get better.
What draws you to the style of music that you're playing? It's a cabaret style. I mean, it's a little bit more like Billy Joel kind of piano music, as opposed to, you know, doing a more sort of rock and roll version of it. What about this kind of music attracts you to it?
Well, I'm attracted to all American roots music and pop music and rock music, and I do love playing rock. I've played in rock bands, and my ideal solo band is a rock band, a full-on band. I'd like three drummers, like congas, timbales, three guitar players. Like that's what we'd be just so progressive. Prog, you know, we'd be like Yes or King Crimson.
Right, of course.
I also do love just sitting and playing the piano because – I can keep whatever time I want. You know, the drummer's going to yell at me if I have a drummer in the band. And now I don't have a drummer. I just play by myself. So I can, you know, I can do whatever I want and no one's going to yell at me. But I'm drawn to piano music, but rock music, roots music, all of that stuff.
You know, it's interesting because Davenport's, as I know it, is the king of – it's the, you know, they're the champion of the piano player who also is really good with the crowd.
Yeah,
you know, you got to up your game of being able to tell stories while you're on the keys. You know, you're gonna have to talk about what we can expect from a performance at Davenport.
You can expect that I'm gonna have a big jar on the piano for your tips, I mean, you can expect covers and originals. I mean, I think it just depends on what the crowd is. If the crowd is a bunch of people that walked in off the street, which has happened, then I will kind of cater to what they want, you know, Billy Joel, Elton John. If it's a bunch of people that I know or people who like original music, I'll play mostly original
music. Is there one avenue you like more than the other? No,
I love both of them. I love writing music. I love playing my own music, but I also love playing covers because it's an out of body experience. You get to be your hero. You get to be Billy Joel, you know, and Billy Joel's pretty awesome. You know, he got a lot of women in his day, and you know, I mean, there's all these pictures of Billy Joel
in
sitting
his day.
At a,
he's still doing it.
He's sitting at a piano, you know, with palm trees on a beach, and there's women just draped around him. So I was like, I get to be Billy Joel if I could just learn how to play you know, scenes from an Italian restaurant or something like that. So I honestly love, and the challenge of learning how to play covers. People came in last week and requested Huey Lewis.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's like,
what do you do? What do you do in that situation if you don't know it?
I recall from memory, and then I Google on my iPad, and I just try to like plow through it. Like they ask for "Happy to Be Stuck with You," "Happy to Be Stuck with You," and that's all I remember from it. So I kind of had to, yes, it's true. Just kind of have to fudge it. And then someone requested Jackson Browne. What was the song? Oh, "She Got to Be Somebody's Baby. She Must Be..." So I just fake it. You know,
I'm amazed at the artistry for musicians who take requests. I mean, if you're in a piano bar and they've got the fishbowl on the front, you put the thing in there and they're like, oh, and they'll be able to do it. As a musician, I mean, how much of it is just faking your way through it, and how much is it having to have a better understanding, a robust encyclopedic knowledge of music?
Well, what you learn with pop music and rock music is every song is like the same three chords. So, you know, I can play, you know, I'll play Elton John, Rocket Man, and then I'll play like Cat Stevens, Wild, whereas, oh, it's the same chords. So a lot of it is just it's faking, you know. A lot of pop and rock is major chords, minor chords, seventh chords. So it's once you kind of have that on your palate, it's pretty easy to just kind of recall from memory how to play that. So I definitely don't like read complex sheet music to play all this stuff.
Para Schutz is a piano player and musician who will be doing a residency at Davenport's in July, Friday nights. He's also a correspondent, fill-in host at Chicago Tonight on Channel 11. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, hear some live music.
Awesome.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Stay with us. Playing along in studio, Para Schutz is here. There it is. All right.
Yeah, oh yeah. Brenda and Eddie. I really thought that they would make it. Brenda and Eddie.
Brenda and Eddie. It's a download in studio with me, Para Schutz. He's a newsman by night and musician by later night.
Newsbro.
Newsbro. Paris is a correspondent and fill-in host over at WTTW Chicago Tonight, but he's also a musician. He's a piano player and singer, and he will be in residency at Davenport's.
Every Friday, although I will be off the last two Fridays in July because I will be at the conventions. So
you know what? This new stuff is getting in the way, man.
Yeah, you know, the $75 for 3 hours at Davenport's that they pay me is... It you know what? They held that up against me and they said, we're not giving you your $75.
Maybe you can find a piano bar in Cleveland and Philadelphia.
Right.
And you can just...
Via satellite. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean...
Just when after Trump is done speaking, you're just like, hey, head on over to the...
Well, yeah, me and Kid Rock. I mean, I think Ted Nugent will...
Sammy Hagar
might be there.
Yeah. All right. So you're live here in studio. You got your piano. We're going to hear a couple songs.
Yeah.
What are you going to play here?
I think this first song I'll play is a song called Ain't Too Proud. It's a funky little tune about being kind of walked over in a relationship. And instead of like standing up and walking out, you just kind of like, you know, because you don't want to cause conflict, it's like, oh, you know, I'll take the blame. I'll be the bad guy. You know, I'll be the doormat. I ain't too proud to be the doormat, to be walked on.
So ain't too proud, ain't dot, too dot, proud, dot, to be dot, the doormat.
Right, to be the doormat.
All right, Para Schutz in studio. Here you go.
I've been sick since you've been gone. Tough traveling the road I'm on. I'm a shell of myself, you can see me crack. There's only one way to get me back on track. You know what you've done to me, and I'm right to let it go. Now only you can set me free, and I ain't too proud to let you know. Thank you.
lost in my head and it's a scary place. A panic sets in that I can't see your face. I lay awake nearly every night, over dread to come in a fright. Now you meant more than life to me, and you knew how hard I'd fall. And only you can set me free, and I ain't too proud to bear it all. Oh, you ignored my call when you saw my name, and it's just a star, 'cause I know your game. So I'll play all day, even if I play in vain. I'll pretend to go away as you pretend to do the same. But I ain't too proud, no, I ain't too proud to take the blame.
The Allstate Showcase Studio. Can we get some love from
all
the
right
street?
We got the people out on the street. Yeah.
No, no clap? No clap. There we go. Right. That's how it works,
right on
guys.
Cue. That's
right
like when Jeb cue. Bush is like, oh, come on, clap
come on,
now.
Guys. Come on, guys.
Clap now.
Ferris Schutz in studio. He's got a residency at Davenport yep. Friday nights in July, except the last two Julys.
Right.
So it's what, next Friday?
Next Friday and then every Friday in August and
oh, okay,
September.
Okay, there we go.
8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Free of charge.
I mean, it's great, and it makes me think that I should probably have every newsman that we have on this show
yeah.
should have to show their talent.
Look at
as
the Ponces.
Well. The Ponces.
You
got
to right? get the Ponces. I'm the Ponces TV son, TV brother.
Right.
So we should hook up and do something. We should start a band,
right.
man. We should start a band.
The TTW singers or something like that.
The
right?
the Ponce yeah, the Ponce the Von Ponce family singers.
For you, I mean, how difficult is it? I mean, you're not whining about it, but the idea of having a life, especially on the news,
yeah.
you know, Chicago Tonight's a show that's on at night, 7 o'clock.
Right.
Then you got to turn around and get ready for, you know, a show,
a
gig. I mean, talk about that life, that dual life of being able to or being in the news business and also
yeah.
being a musician.
Well, it, you know, you run around 10 hours and report and then go on live TV and you're, you know, you're hyped up. And then after that, I have to carry all my gear, which you see is like this is pretty cumbersome. You know, this is a lot, the keyboard and the amp and all that. Get to a gig at 8 o'clock, you know, set up really quick and play until midnight and then, you know, get up at 7:30, 8 o'clock the next morning and do it again. It's killer. I mean, it's killer. I kind of like lay awake at night dreading days like that. But I do it. I take every gig that I can take because I love it. I love playing. I got to play. It's an outlet. I got to write music. I can't not write, you know?
There's something really great and specific and special and
you,
magical.
And you get that.
Yeah.
yeah.
About, but what I really like is there's something great about a piano bar. Mm-hmm. And there's something great about the music you're playing, and the it's almost harkens back to an older time. And
yeah.
Chicago has those places. Talk about that environment. I mean, you play in those places. Davenport's is like
right.
that. Talk about sort of growing up and being a musician in a piano bar.
Well, I've played in the rock bars like Empty Bottle and Beat Kitchen and Subterranean, and Davenport's, a piano bar. Everyone is up close on you, so you're not on stage performing for everybody, and there's not this like firewall here. They're all part of the performance, and so you kind of got to incorporate them. And like you said, you have to entertain. You're an entertainer at a piano bar. You know, you're giving them 2 hours of pure entertainment, like you do with Schadenfreude. I mean, you have to make them go home feeling good,
yeah.
and you know that means that they want to hear that their favorite Billy Joel tune or their favorite Beatles tune. So that's what that is. Whereas at a rock bar, you're just kind of like untouchable, you know.
You're up there. You got to wear tighter pants. That's the big difference.
I always wear tight pants. I always. And at the piano bar, maybe I'll wear like jean shorts or something.
Yeah, you gotta spice it up.
Yeah.
All right. So it's Davenport's 8 o'clock residency, except for the last two Fridays in July. One more song.
Yeah, sure. I'll do one more. This is a song called. What's it called? Oh, it's called The Day After. The Day After. So this is another little simple kind of pop tune about, you meet someone really special and you have an amazing time. And then the day after, you're kind of stuck. You're like, what do I do? If I call her, yeah, I'm going to look desperate. If I don't call her, maybe she's going to think I'm not interested. So you're kind of paralyzed, and you're just kind of laying in bed, just, beating your head against the wall, saying, what do I do? And then you just end up, thinking about it for a week.
All right.
So this is The Day After.
The Day After, Parachutes.
I'm shaking, my heart is aching. I've been up all night. Affection, a soul connection. I'm feeling all right. How she came into my life and went my heart right away. Over music and dinner and laughter. Should I call her? Should I write her? Should I soldier on despite her? I don't know which way to go on the day after. I'm waiting, commiserating. I'm starting to doubt that she wants me. How the feeling haunts me. I can't figure out. Should I send her a message, but I don't want to beg. Let her know how I have to have her. Should I call her? Should I write her? Should I soldier on despite her? I don't know how I'm gonna make it on the day after. Do wanna be the one to break the ice. She'll never know I ever thought twice or thereafter. Should I call her? Should I write her? Should I soldier on despite her? I don't know which way to go. What will she call me? Will she write me? Will she soldier on despite me? I'll just have to wait until another day after. Another day after. Another day after. That live You know, with the band, we jammed that out for like 17 minutes. That's a guitar solo.
Let's get some cheering out there.
Right, yeah.
There you go.
Thank you, everybody.
Allstate Showcase Studio in full effect here on Michigan Avenue. Parachutes, he is in residency at the at Davenport's on Milwaukee, 1383 North Milwaukee.
Is that what it is?
In Wicker Park.
Yeah, it's next to the falafel place.
Next to the falafel place. You check him out Fridays at 8, except the last two Julys, because you'll be at the convention doing your day job, which is correspondent fill-in host at
Chicago Tonight.
WTTW. Thanks for coming in, Paris.
Hey, Justin, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. Thanks, Rob. We will check back in with Rob Martier at the top of the hour. Give us an update on what's going on in Dallas and around the country. Big news night tonight. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Greg Flam's going to be here. We're going to play Swap Meet, sort of our Chicago Antique Roadshow, where we evaluate the worth of your Chicago junk. It's a pretty simple concept. 312-981-7200. I'm excited about it. I want to see what my piece of jagged concrete from the old Comiskey Park is worth. Something tells me nothing. Greg's going to tell me nothing. But I do have there's no plaque. There's no symmetry. It is truly a slab, like a jagged slab of concrete that had no discerning quality whatsoever to it. But somebody told me it's from Comiskey, so it's got to be worth something. We'll see. Well, coming up on July 17th at 1 o'clock, it's an architecture tour showdown. Yep, two of Chicago's best tour guides will be doing a dueling tour guide called Burnham vs. Sullivan, the tour of the century, where they pin. It's sort of like they pit. I've been saying it all day. It's sort of like a terracotta bloodbath. There's going to be a lot. I don't know what's going to happen here, but Margaret Hicks, who's a regular to the show, is in studio. She's part of this. And Wendy Bright as well. Margaret Hicks is elevated. Wendy Bright, Wendy City, WendyCityChicago.com. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Justin.
All right, so let's talk about where this came from, the idea of Burnham versus Sullivan.
Okay, so the two men are always used, you know, they're at the same time period, they're peers, they're building buildings at the same time, and they're so different. These are two completely different men. And so there's always this eternal question of, like, who's better? And I always think Sullivan comes up as the answer. And so we did a tour together about Richard Nickel. We did a special tour together. We had such a good time. So on that tour, I think we came up with this idea. Is that right, Wendy?
That is exactly right. Everybody on that tour loved what we were doing, this kind of pinch-hitting, trading off kind of tour. And we both have very different styles. And we both have our natural affinities for each architect. So it was easy for us to say, hey, let's compare. Let's debate live on the sidewalks in front of people.
Is it going to sort of crescendo into a full-out brawl?
There will be actual fighting, but tour guide fighting is different. It's not that violent. It's a lot of slapping.
It's a lot of facts.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Challenges
and facts.
Challenge. Yeah.
All right. So Wendy, why don't we start with you? So Burnham versus Sullivan. Who do you got?
I have Sullivan.
All right.
Louis Sullivan. He is actually my favorite architect.
Okay. Why is he your favorite?
He was brilliant. He was poetic. His buildings make me weep. So there's a lot of emotion behind it, but also a lot of study and knowledge. So I can talk about him. And there's so little of his work left. So there's this poignant quality, and that his career trajectory was downward.
Right.
So it's a story. And
so, I mean, there's not a lot of his work left, especially if you're doing tours and walking tours. Where is Louis Sullivan best represented in the city of Chicago?
We're pretty fortunate that way, that we've got a concentration in the Loop. We've got a nice handful of representative buildings and a few far-flung things that we will not be looking at on this tour. But I usually use images when I give tours, so I've got some really nice images. Richard Nickel photographs that I will be showing if I want to illustrate a point.
I see, yeah.
So if I can do that.
And give us an example of one of the Louis Sullivan properties or the architectural gems in downtown Chicago that we should know about.
Carson Perry Scott's store, today's Target, Sullivan Center.
Great Target.
City. It is a great
Target.
That is the best Target. And I love shopping there, not only because it's a nice Target, but also because I can touch the Louis Sullivan ornament.
Right, so right.
This emotional experience when I go buy detergent. But I love that building. And it's a complicated building, and it needs to be explained, I think, to some extent. And we still have it. It's a National Historic Landmark. Mm-hmm. It's been beautifully preserved. So, and it's right in the center of everything.
All right. Well, let's make a transition. That means, Margaret Hicks, you're going to get Burnham, Daniel Burnham. obviously, Daniel Burnham, considered to be the architect who created the blueprint for the city of Chicago as we know it.
Absolutely, right? The 1909 plan, and he planned the World's Fair of 1893, and there's so many Burnham buildings. We could go see. Wendy and I have been really working on this because there's, you know, 20 Burnham buildings we can go see and like two Louis Sullivan buildings. Mm-hmm. What's interesting to me is the classic thing that's said about Burnham is that he was not a great architect. He was a great planner. And that just riles me. Oh, I get all riled up. What does that even mean? Why are we saying, what is that? He's not a good architect. That's ridiculous, right? Look at all these buildings that are still here. You know why? They're good buildings.
Well, okay, give us a representative for people who are listening out there who are, okay, are racking their brain about what's a good Daniel Burnham building.
Sure. So the Reliance Building. Mm-hmm. Right on Washington and State there, Marshall Fields, the Rookery, Union Station. What else am I missing? The Monadnock. Like, it's just one after the other. It's really ridiculous. So to call him this, you know, the thing is, oh, he picks a good partner, and the partner is the creative. Well, since when does picking a partner mean you're not a good architect? Isn't that part of it? Isn't the planning part of it? I mean, come on. I think there's no contest. Burnham wins.
You're really getting riled up here.
I'm telling you, save it for
July 17th. July 17th at 1 o'clock, it's Burnham vs. Sullivan, the tour of the century. Margaret Hicks and Wendy Bright will be your tour guides. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation about who is better. Simple as that. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Rob Martire will join us at the top of the hour to update us on tonight's news, including news out of Dallas, protests that are getting out of control. We'll give you an update on that. Rob's got all the latest, and he will give it to you in about 10, 12 minutes. In studio with me right now, Margaret Hicks and Wendy Bright. They're tour guides here in Chicago. And they are putting together the tour of the century, Burnham vs. Sullivan. It's going to be on July 17th at 1 o'clock. It's an architectural showdown. Two of Chicago's best tour guides talking about two of Chicago's best architects. And you guys are kind of designing this to pit against each other, that, you know, one is better than the other. I mean, what are some of the tactics that you're going to use? I mean, is it going to be just trying to win over the audience that you have?
Yeah, take it, Wendy Bright. So we have, it is going to be sort of debate style, and there is going to be a winner at the end. After each round, the people in the group are going to anonymously vote for who they think won that round. And then so we'll gather those points, and at the end we'll do one final vote, see who wins. And the question here is not who's the better architect. It's just who's better.
Right.
Just who's better.
Who's better.
So we have different breakdowns, like
different themes. So we're going to talk about their partnerships. We're going to talk about how they handled, say, the department store, Marshall Fields versus Carson Perry Scott. We're going to talk about what's their idea of beauty and style. Mm-hmm. And that really separates the two men.
We have a quote battle.
That's the best.
We have a quote battle.
We'll
do that.
We'll do
a couple little quote battles. We have quote battles about things they said. Mm-hmm. We have a quote battle about things that were said about them. And we have a quote battle about what they said about each other.
You know, when you guys are putting together walking tours and you guys both do them separately, this is, you know, the second time you guys are doing something together. You know, what's the range of knowledge that someone is bringing to a walking tour? Are you bringing someone who's novice, moderate, or are there people who are advanced and wanting to know more intricate details about Louis Sullivan or about Daniel Burnham?
I think we're going to see the gamut. We did with the Richard Nickel tour. We had very informed people there, and some people had never heard of Richard Nickel. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be the same this time, I suspect, because people have heard of Burnham, they've heard of Sullivan. And what's this about? I can imagine there'd be people who would, you know, what's the debate? What's the deal? But there'll be people, I think, who are going to come who have
they a
know
nice base of knowledge.
They know who's better.
In your research, you talked about these two being around at the same time. What do you know what their relationship was? I mean, what was Sullivan and Burnham, you know, what were they adversaries? Were they partners? What did the two bring to the table?
Yes, they were. That's right.
They were both. And there really are some quotes about how they talked about each other, what they said about each other. And there are both nice quotes about each other and a little not meaner, but some.
I think they were always
Sullivan
respectful.
Had some things to say.
Really? They were mostly respectful.
Mostly respectful.
I think they frustrated each other.
I do.
So that's going to come up.
Burnham helped Sullivan a couple times with some cash.
He did.
So we know that. There were instances of Burnham taking care of Sullivan and instances of Sullivan having some really nice things to say about Burnham, but also some really icky things to say. Right. And same with Burnham. I think he had some words about Sullivan, too. So,
and this is before Twitter.
And this is before Twitter. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine these two?
And then I always think about the other architects, right? Like the Halliburton and Roches and the Shepley, Rutans, and Coolidge, who were like, well, these two guys, just let it go. Let the rest of us play. You know, what other people were saying about them, too. It's really interesting. I mean, this is what was going on here. And to think, you know, they were literally crossing paths, you know, seeing each other in the street and that kind of thing. I think
was when you talk about the quotes and about the harsh things said about each other, I mean, they do represent, I mean, they are different styles. I mean, ornate in Louis Sullivan that's really about the intricate details of a building. And then you have Daniel Burnham, which is almost bigger swaths that are saying, even though he is an architect and he does have a style, there's much more about a big buildings and grid.
Definitely, right? Definitely. That's why they're so much fun. And we've been noticing, too, like, you know, Burnham had a hard time in the beginning of his career, and then he soared, and Louis Sullivan had an easier time in the beginning, and then he sank. And then when they died, Louis Sullivan's reputation got higher, and Burnham's went down. So there's really, they crisscross in places. And then we even talked tonight about how in some places they're parallel. Hmm. They were on almost the same path and just trying to change minds with architecture. So it's really interesting that way. There are things that were the same and things that were really different.
One thing we noticed was pivotal for both men was they both lost their architecture partners. Burnham did repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And how did they handle that? And so mixed bag for both of them, successes and failures in the wake of losing a partner.
And that's a really great point. I mean, for every Daniel Burnham success story or Louis Sullivan success story, there are some buildings that didn't take, that are projects that never got off the ground. Right. I mean, and for what's been saved in this city, there's a lot that's been trashed.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, especially with Sullivan.
Sullivan's.
Yeah.
Like they just got rid of it for, we need a new building, that kind of thing.
People didn't understand the beauty of those buildings, especially in the 50s and 60s. And Richard Nickel is, of course, you know, one of the first
to... Tried to save them,
to call attention to them. But, yeah, Sullivan buildings went... The wrecking ball was just about every day, in the 50s especially, every day. People would look at the listings in the paper, and people like Richard Nickel who were trying to, you know, take a piece of it or take a photo, and they would chase these buildings, try to capture something of them before they were lost forever. There are dozens and dozens every day.
And for Daniel Burnham, it's a little bit of the same thing because, you know, he's obviously created the blueprint and the grid that is Chicago, but there's a lot of things from, whether it be from fairs or on, that didn't stick.
Oh, sure. And buildings that came down and that kind of thing, certainly, too. I mean, that's the thing. I think with Burnham, there was this big thing of it was all so easy for him. It was just he was a great big success all the time. And he had a hard time, too. You know, it was rough for him, too. But there is a fun argument, you know, about why the Burnham buildings mostly still stand.
What's the fun argument?
They're better buildings, baby.
Well, that's trash talk. What do you say to
They're
that?
They're better buildings, baby.
What do you say to that?
Louis Sullivan was innovative. He was experimenting, much like Frank Lloyd Wright would carry on and do. So some things didn't necessarily work. Some materials didn't hold up. But the buildings were innovative and new. So he wasn't doing the tried and true that everybody, all the developers wanted.
All right. Well, Wendy, you got a week or so. You got to be able to end that with, but you know, and I'll tell you, This is what Burnham did wrong. Snap. You need to come up with some lines or something.
We gotta
yeah. Margaret's going. Already ahead. She's digging.
I've been working on
thing.
My line, my one-liners. I've been working on them.
I got to snap it
most
up.
Of, that's most right. of all. Yeah.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, how are you guys going to be able to – I mean, it's as much telling the information and exploring the history of Chicago and these two architects as it is the performance of the tour. When you think about how you're doing it, I mean, how much do you guys have to rehearse and put things together to not step on each other, to play out the game that is this this showdown?
One thing we're doing with this tour is we're really collaborating closely. We don't want to come at anything with a surprise.
Right, like, I don't want to shock Wendy yeah. with some piece of information. So we have an order. It's mm-hmm. a lot like a herald.
Improv,
but we have an order. So she'll talk, then I talk. There's not a lot of rebuttal time or anything like that. It's mostly like we're going to lay out the information mm-hmm. side by side and let the people decide. Right.
Okay, so I keep saying July 17th at 1 o'clock. Yeah. Where should they start?
We're meeting at Block 37. Okay. So State and Randolph.
Going to hit the Disney store, maybe check out a movie.
We're going to do that. Yeah, we get cheeseburgers in our seats. It's going to be great. Sullivan cheeseburgers. And then we're going to start walking around. And, you know, it's all, we've got a nice little route planned and it's all over. And
we specifically strategized which two buildings we could compare and contrast. Mm-hmm. So we chose places where you could see buildings from both architects, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. took us a little while, but we did it.
You figured it out. Okay, right. So where can we find out information? What website are you guys pushing towards?
So you can come to my website, Chicago Elevated. I have a post about it, and Wendy has one at
WendyCityChicago.com.
There you go. So Chicago Elevated, Margaret Hicks. Wendy Bright is with Wendy City, WendyCityChicago.com. The tour is Burnham versus Sullivan. The tour of the century. It's July 17th at 1 o'clock. Just meet around Block 37. And if it were me, I'd dress up like the architects, but that's just me.
I think that's a good idea.
You think so?
Maybe like half and half.
Yeah. Like with a little top hat. What would you think? I have no – and don't go to the internet to try and figure out just what you think they would look like, right?
Yeah, right. A little bow tie. Sullivan love bow ties. Huge.
Margaret, Wendy, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Coming up, Greg Flamm is in the building. We're going to give you another installment of Swap Meet. This, of course, is sort of like Chicago's Antique Roadshow, where we evaluate your Chicago junk. How many? We've already kind of made the, you know, last week, I think it was a lot. There was a lot about posters. There's a lot about like the free posters that you got from the Chevy dealership or the McDonald's, that kind of place. That was like the 85 Bears and whether or not that's worth anything. Greg always brings good stuff in. He finds stuff throughout the week, going to estate sales and garage sales, picking through the trash, dumpster diving. I just like to see Greg knee deep in the dumpster. Oh, I found something. Oh, it's just a banana peel.
He's got like two big bouncers holding his ankles as he's upside down, over
right,
the dumpster.
Right. That's our job. That's what Pete and I do. We go out with him and we're the spotters.
A little lower. I almost got it.
Well, that's coming up. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. I give you that phone number because it is time for Swap Meet. We all own something that connects us to this great city. Whether it's memorabilia or a souvenir, we go out of our way to keep it from the trash bin. When we move, we take good care to preserve it. It's not junk. It's Chicago history.
Yep.
What do you have? Well, it's time for Swap Meet. It's like Chicago Antique Roadshow. You call in and impress us with what you have, and we tell you if it's worth anything. And so far, there's been some times that it's been worth some stuff.
Yeah, we've had some good stuff.
312-981-7200. It's your chance to really just trade. What it really is it's your chance to brag about the things you've collected over the years. My guest tonight, Greg Flamm. He's in studio. He goes by the name DuPage Picker on Twitter. Greg, good to see you.
Always great, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. One of my favorite segments of the week.
Always fun.
Yeah, so let's see. So as I've been sort of forward promoting all night, you have been busy this week, and you have some stuff that you've collected this week for to start us off. So talk about what you brought in studio tonight.
Sure. So I brought in, being All-Star Week coming up, I brought in some All-Star memorabilia from the White Sox from 1983 and from, what was this one again, 2003. And then the St. Louis All-Star Game. I don't have any Cubs All-Star.
What is that? Is that the, this, what, no, not the bear, but the, yeah, what is this?
So it's a seat cushion. Right. Sponsored by Yago.
Yago and baseball.
That's right.
Now that's class.
Yep. So, and I have a thing with seat cushions. It's like I just pick them up whenever I see them. I'm like, someone's got to want this.
That's got to be the quote of the night. I got a thing for seat cushions.
That's right. Seat cushions. And and then I brought in, Mr. Popiel Pocket Fisherman and some other stuff I found this week were mostly some handheld early Mattel games.
You got the Popiel. Let's start there.
Sure.
This is the Pocket Fisherman.
Sure.
What is that?
Well,
I remember Popiel, and I remember the knife and that kind of thing, but the Pocket Fisherman. Wow, look at that thing.
And it collapses. So I remember in the commercials in the 70s, I think it was, it could collapse, and everyone would be putting them in their glove compartment. So they just come up on a lake or a fishing hole, they could just pull it out and, you know, drop a line. So, but yeah, I had one in a box that I did sell. This one was without the box, and it had a cute little compartment here that you could put the bobber, styrofoam bobber. Obviously, I don't have that, but it does work, and it's kind of cool, and it's a good conversation piece. If you just let this out in the living room,
that's a coffee table.
It is. I mean, it's better than a conversation book. So that's kind of cool. But the Ronco and Popiel stuff, obviously, you know, everyone has a story with that. I thought that would spark
and
some
then
conversation.
Let's talk about the video games you have here.
Sure. I have a small Pocket Simon. Yeah. I have the original Mattel Electronics basketball, which I believe came out in 76 or 77. And they remade them. So for values-wise, you want to look on the back, make sure it says 76, 77. Those are worth more, of course, than the 2001.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So there's that. And then I have Merlin. Game in the box, and you know they had what, like 9 different games it would play, but you know that is stuff like people want their childhood. You know they want it. People redo whole rooms like their childhood. You know, so they collect that stuff, and you know, like I said, probably previous episodes, 35 to 55 is kind of, you know, those people are collecting their childhood.
312-981-7200. The phone's already lit up. Pete is busy. Taking some names down. Let me start with David and see what we got tonight. David, welcome to Swap Meet. What do you got?
Well, I have a Cornets piece from the Stock Exchange building designed by Louis Sullivan.
Yeah, right. We were just talking about that.
Wow, that's that sounds.
Isn't that the building? Isn't that the story of Richard Nickel? That he went into that building when it was beat up, and that's where he fell and he died inside of that building when they were actually wrecking it, right?
Yeah, well the wall collapsed on him, as I understand.
Yeah, so that's a piece of the Stock Exchange.
Wow, that's
Thanks a lot for that, David.
Thanks, David.
Sure.
What do building like pieces of building and things like that go for?
It's something where sometimes you got to have the providence. You want to have a plaque or some kind of paperwork that went with it. Some people have it mounted, whatever, you know, just so they can, you know, give more of a story than just having, like, we had one lady with an asphalt from Marshall Fields or something.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to have it done right if it's something worthwhile to yourself as a memory or monetarily. You want to have it mounted or displayed right.
I'm screwed on my jagged piece of concrete that I have from the old Comiskey.
Old Comiskey,
and I'm not even sure where I got it, and it's not labeled. It's just in a box, and I'm like, I just know that. Hey, that's from old Comiskey.
Here's a similar story. I actually have the confetti from the ticker tape parade when the Sox won, and I put that in a bag, and I'm thinking, you know, no one's going to believe me when I say this is from, you know, but I know, and you that's all it matters.
In here.
Right,
in here.
Right here. It's
right, it's right here. All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Betty. Betty.
Yeah,
hi. How you doing? What do you
Betty.
Got?
I'm doing fine. I was listening to you talk about the architecture.
Yeah, right.
And back in the, I don't know if it was the late 60s, early 70s, Carson Perry Scott had a series of plastic bags that they would put their, you know, you carry home all your goodies in.
Right.
And they were really neat. They had all kind of different designs on them. Some were kind of like a Peter Mac style.
Okay.
Others were floral and that. And I just kept a bunch of them because I thought they were so nice.
Sure.
Is there any kind of a, you know, can you tell me anything about those? Or are those worth anything in the...
I don't know.
Specifically, I couldn't tell you, but I do know, like, Marshall Field bags. I've seen a lot of 45 of them go for, like, $60. You know, it's crazy.
Wow.
You would never think just the plastic bags. So obviously Carson's isn't around anymore, right?
Well, I mean, Carson's is the, I think the store is still around in some place, but not that one.
That
downtown.
One, right. Yeah. Yeah. And so yeah, it's something, you know, if you don't want it and you want to take a chance, throw it online and see, you know, but be patient with it. Give it, you know, maybe 2 months, you know, cause it's not something that's probably going to sell in 5 days.
Memorabilia is like fishing. Throw it out there. Just got to be
right,
patient.
Right.
You got to see what
it's a lot
back.
Of things.
But
a lot of things.
Rompo Peel Fisher, pocket fisher.
Right. Right.
All right. Let's go to Steve. Steve has got. Steve, what do you have here?
I've got a Mickey Mouse spacesuit from the early 60s.
Okay.
It's never been opened.
Wow.
Wow.
And if the suit was open, like what size? Child size or what's, you know?
Child size.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That would. Being Disney, obviously, that is value right there. But then, you know, old Halloween costumes have the value as well. And since it's never been opened, yeah, you have something special there. I've never seen that.
Wow,
Steve. It's very small.
Wow.
Why haven't you not opened it over the years?
Well, I didn't have it. My dad had it.
Okay. You were smart not to open it.
Yeah.
I would have destroyed it.
Right. You got to keep some stuff out of kids' reach.
Yeah. All right. Well,
but that's awesome, though. Yeah, you definitely got something nice there.
All right. Good. Congrats, Steve. Got something nice. It's always good. Yeah. We don't get to hear that enough in society.
Right.
I'm never. It's something I'd like to hear once a day. You got something nice,
you got
Justin.
Something nice.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. That makes me feel so good. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got some texts. Also, Jim's on the line. I want to keep Jim. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. If you have some memorabilia, something that you are fond of, that you want to brag about, that you want to see is worth anything, now's the time to call here on Swap Meet. Greg Flam's in studio with us. We'll be right back. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're playing Swap Meet tonight. Greg Flam's in studio. You can find him at @DuPagePicker on Twitter. We are evaluating your junk.
Right.
Your memorabilia.
Right.
You got some great junk in studio.
I try. It's a challenge.
I've already got a text from somebody who said, how much for the Popeil pocket fisherman?
Yeah, it's something I'm not emotionally attached to, so I can part with that.
We need to get like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire sound effects and just kind of milk the drama
right,
of whether or not Greg will give up the Popeil fisherman.
Yeah,
the pocket fisherman.
Orchestra swell or something in there, yeah.
Does he? Will he? Will he sell? All right, let's go to Jim. Jim, what do you got for tonight on Swap Meet? You there, Jim?
Well, my name's not Tim. My name's Tim, if you're talking to me.
Oh, I am. I'm so sorry, Tim. Sorry about that.
Yes, my phone number is 815-70.
Right, you don't have to give me your phone number.
Okay, but in case anybody wants it.
Is that your memorabilia, your phone number?
No, I got a 1920s American Radiola 62 made by RCA.
Wow.
It's got a full model, got an inlay on it out of this world. I'm on 120 at a big barn yard sale. Can be seen all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's beautiful.
I'm sure it is.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Yeah, I've been.
Did you just give a commercial for his yard sale?
Right, yeah. We could go look at the Motorola radio. Yeah, they, you know, certain models obviously sell faster than others. I've had some that sit forever, so I kind of, you know, you got to get the right person with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, I guess it falls into furniture.
Right. Yeah, that model, 1920s, would be a big furniture item.
And there's a whole market. I mean, what I'd say to Tim is, you know, the idea that, I mean, I think of all the different antique shops that are going and finding things, they're going to be at your yard sale on 120 at some point, right, Friday, Saturday, right, Sunday, because they'll buy that stuff.
Right,
because
and it doesn't even have to work, they'll buy it.
Right, they'll buy it and they'll fix it up, and the next thing you know, you're in some hipster antique shop, and they're like, we need $1,200
for it. Yeah, right, exactly.
Like, I got to have
exactly.
it. I got to have it. That stuff goes.
Exactly. All right, I've seen it.
Yeah, let's go to Ann. Ann,
What do you got, Ann?
Hi, Ann.
I have a ticket for Soldier Field, football, all-star football, Green Bay Packers against the College All-Stars, and that's from August the 30th, 1945.
Wow.
Oh, by the way, they paid $1.20 for it.
Nice. Well, of course. That's, you know, we had ticket stubs here last weekend, and yeah, people collect that stuff. Obviously, Green Bay or Chicago Bears stuff. Yeah, that's gonna.
And that's interesting. That's gonna be something that people want. College All Star. That's a whole different kind of.
Yeah,
there's some history in that.
There is, and I thought she was joking, referring to the Bears as the College All Stars.
Oh, no.
But the ticket. I guess it's probably in the $20 range if you're looking for a value. I would start there with an auction anyway and go from there.
All right.
But
thank you.
You have one or a pair, or what do you have?
No, I just have one, and then there's some baseball cards here that are, I never heard of. It's Hannes Wagner.
Okay. yeah, he's nobody.
Trainer, and the last one is Jimmy Collins.
Yeah, that I would have if you have a relative that could look into that for you, because that the Wagner card could be a huge thing, so you might want to have that checked out.
And I have to say, Ann, probably the best swap meet ever, that you just randomly went through Hannes Wagner's name. As if you've never heard of it. One of the biggest stars in baseball history. And you're like, I've got a rookie card for Hanley Wagner.
Have that checked out. Don't let your grandkids put that in the spokes of their bike.
Hold on to that. See what it's worth.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Man. Thanks. 312-981-7200. I'm loving the swap meet callers tonight.
We got an energy.
Little flavor.
That's right.
A little flavor.
Boost it up a bit.
312-981-7200. Let's go to the text. 773 says, I have a woman's wool coat, camel color, with a hood with fur trim from Marshall Fields. Bought it in the 60s. It's never been worn. Still has a sales tag attached.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge. So if you're looking to sell it, stick to your guns on that. Don't take the first offer. Have it appraised for sure. For... coats are kind of out of my realm, but Marshall Fields never worn with the price
about,
tag.
Greg? I look
every week, and I just don't
fur coat
find it.
Guy. Yeah, that's pretty good. I
have a nice Marshall Fields collection for sure, and one day maybe we'll get into that. But yeah, with the tag, fur coat, never worn. Yeah, that's huge. Have a check out.
219 says they got a Chicago Police button badge from the 30s, made from a dress uniform button.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Was that like a sheriff button or a police button, or what was it?
Yeah, Chicago Police button.
Yeah, anything
badge from the
30s. Police badges are big. Yeah, definitely had that checked out.
All right. Let's go to Harry. Harry, what do you got, Harry?
Actually, it's Terry with a T.
We're having a good night tonight. All right. Terry, thank you for the call. Sorry for messing up your name. Terry, what do you got? What do you got, buddy?
I've got a Field in the original box plastic on it. United Airlines mainliner model airplane, Douglas DC-7 H-168, four-engine era with optional landing gear.
Okay, great.
Well, optional, good.
No, you had me halfway through there. those are cool. The model airplanes, especially like any airlines where they would be like on an executive desk from back in the day, 50s, 60s, 70s, those hold their value. And if they're in good shape where your kids weren't playing with it, you can get a decent dollar for that. So maybe have someone look that up for you.
Where would I go for that? My parents recently passed away, and I found all this stuff.
Okay. I would, if you know someone, you know, who's good at eBay, just check the sold sections. Like, everyone always wants to look at what's available. Anyone can ask for anything for $1 million. You always want to click the sold button, and that will tell you what they're actually selling for. And maybe if you know someone who's good with eBay, they can help you out with that.
So I shouldn't go to, like, a model store or anything like that and try and
help most of them, they probably won't know, to be honest with you. You might catch a guy who's really into that, but you might have to go to 3 model stores. So
probably
and
they're
easier.
Not going to buy it off you, right?
Right, and if they do, they're going to, you know, try to get it cheap from you, and that's not good. So you want to get the most. And, you know, your parents held out on it that long, you might as well get the most for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, Harry. Terry. That just tells you the calls are coming in fast, and Pete is throwing names up at record
speed.
He's got a lot going on in there. Let's go to Denise.
Uh-huh.
Denise.
Yes.
Hi, Denise.
Hi.
You still have that, what, Eisenhower coin?
Yeah, and it's got description on here. It says Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Are you trying to get my job? Do you want to come in next Thursday?
No, I'm not trying to get that
job. I know. It's awesome to hear from you.
Huh?
So it's awesome to hear from you. What did you find out about that?
Oh, okay. It got description on the back of it.
Okay.
Okay. And
you ready?
Huh?
You ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. Hit
okay,
me.
Okay. It said Dwight D. Eisenhower was born October 14, 1890. Nickname Ike. Popular hero of World War II. It said added in arranging the Korea troop first president of in.
That's a lot to put on a coin.
Of 50 states.
Yeah, that's a lot going on there. It
that's
was.
A lot.
They said he died March 28th. And
are you sure you're not just reading his bio?
Right,
that sounds very like
that's
put
a lot.
His bio on the back of
and
a coin.
And they said he was the 34th president.
Yeah,
right.
Is what that about his favorite food? Does it put his favorite food on there, Denise?
No, I ain't got that.
Is that the only coin you have, or do you have? I hope you have others.
No, just the only one.
Oh man, then you know you got to take a trip to a coin shop and have that checked out. You know.
Oh, okay. Because you know I'm just gonna just throw in the draw.
Oh well, yeah. You could also keep it, hand it down, whatever. You know, but
it's interesting.
You've so got, what y'all think?
I like it, Denise. I think that it's. I've never heard of a coin with a 600-word bio on the back.
Right.
He got his picture on the front, too.
Wow.
Like I said, are you sure it's not a plate? It seems like it'd be more of a plate than a coin. But
right. This looks like it's real because the color on this is brown-looking. It's real. That seems like it's way back.
That coin must be really heavy.
1953 to 1961.
Here's what I suggest, Denise. I think that it's something of interest and it's unique, and I agree with Greg that you should look up are there coin shops?
Like coin collectors, anything gold, metal, you know, shops that will evaluate that for you.
And see if you can find out more about it. Denise, thanks so much for calling back. It was
regular.
Great to hear your voice.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Denise. She's you're getting regular,
I know.
Sir, Greg.
We're building.
That's great. That is the weirdest coin.
Yeah, it's got a lot going on. I think
a lot going
I don't
on.
Think she read everything on it myself, but we'll find out. Stay tuned.
Chapter 2, right. All right, so... 312 says, hi, I'm in Pilsen. I have autographs from Mike Singletary, Dan Hampton, Todd Bell, Steve McMichael, Doug Plank, Leslie Frazier, and several others on the same piece of paper. Is that worth anything?
Wow. On a regular piece of paper, I mean, you'd have to, you know, maybe mat that and put some maybe pictures of them around it, you know, present that a little bit better. Then, you know, you might be talking about something. But just on a plain sheet of paper, I don't know, you know.
You know, you mentioned a couple times, like, you know, about if somebody is interested, like, for instance, let's say that piece of paper was something that piqued your interest, or maybe some of the stuff we heard earlier, like even the model plane.
Right.
And you mentioned about eBay. I mean, to help people who may have come across this stuff because, you know, they were cleaning out a deceased parent or a loved one, or maybe they inherited something. If they are in a situation where they think they have something, what's the process? I mean, for them to go to eBay, that's one thing, but what's the process when they get serious about trying to, I guess, monetize it?
Well, everyone, it's worth to different people like their time to check it out and to go through the process of selling it and then shipping it. And then you got to hope everything goes well with them receiving it and so forth. First off, if it's a monetary amount that you can't afford to lose, always put a signature on it. But if you can afford to lose it, then just send it regular with a tracking number. As far as finding out what it's worth, like I said, we always tell people coin collectors or sportsmen, check those places out. But I think it's worth, if you just spend a little time on eBay, you can figure out how it works. And like I said, always click that, filter where it says sold. Because like I said, anyone can list a cracker for $1 million, you want to make sure it was sold for that. Right. It could have Abraham Lincoln on it or something.
Before we go to the news, let's bring in Flip because Flip has a tip for Denise when it comes to coins. Flip, thanks for joining us. So what's a tip for Denise and her Eisenhower coin?
Well, I don't know anything about the Eisenhower coin, but just she has to watch out for anybody with any kind of coinage and wants to take them into dealers.
Right.
They might want to lowball them or then there's a place downtown in the city that I took some coins there that I got out of change, very, very old dimes. And the first coin shop I called, now we can only give you the silver value.
Right.
You know, which is $50 or $70. But either way, I really wanted to get them appraised. And there's a place downtown, and I guess this goes all the way across the board with any place, but they'll have you sign a contract for the appraisal, and then they'll get a certain percentage of the sale.
Whatever comes
right,
out.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And you're almost always going to get lowballed if you take it to, you know, professional, because they have to make their money as well.
This is true.
Again,
all right, thanks, Flip.
But, like, you know, a 1950s quarter with the silver amount, you can get $9 for a quarter from, like, 1950. So just a little bit of research. I'm sure everyone has someone in their family that's doing eBay that knows a little bit about it.
And thank you, Flip, for giving me my new name for my independent band, Very, Very Old Dimes.
Nice. That works.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Very, Very Old Dimes.
Yep.
All right. All right, we'll take a break for the news. We'll come back. We'll play some more swap meet. If you got some junk memorabilia or Chicago history in your possession and you want to know what it's worth, 312-981-7200. That's the number. Greg Flam's in studio, DuPage Picker on Twitter. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN 720, playing swap meet, but that news is terrible.
Yep.
Dallas police talking that three officers were killed, seven others injured after sniper shootings during Dallas protests. The worst part is suspects at large. That's awful. That's tough to hear. And heart goes out to all the victims, the people who were shot, obviously the deceased police officers. There'll be more on this story coming from Rob Martier, WGN News. Also, making sure we got people on the ground there. We're going to start seeing if Jim Ryan can join us. We'll pick it up as well. I mean, this is not a good night in America, where a sniper, maybe possibly two snipers, shot 10 police officers, killing three in Dallas, Texas tonight.
Yep.
Wow. Earlier reports were that the suspects were in custody, but the Dallas police chief said there are no suspects in custody. So we'll keep you updated on that story here on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200. We're playing Swap Meet. This is where we're sort of Chicago Antique Roadshow, where we are sort of evaluating your memorabilia. There are some texts. Greg Flam's in studio with me at DuPage Picker. Let's go through some of the things that are coming through. 773 says that the Eisenhower medallion that Denise is talking about, there are a couple on eBay. Denise should check that out.
Right. Like I said, that's a good way to compare what you have, and then condition plays into it as well. So you can evaluate how your coin would fall in with that then.
So it's a medallion.
Yeah, that's, well, and that's, you know, if you don't know what it is, you know,
it's a good play to do it. Yeah, yeah. Right. 219, a 1992 Pittsburgh Penguins Wheaties box signed by the entire team.
Wow. Yeah, that's something, especially since they won this past year as well. So again, you can look that up as well and see where it falls in. The entire team, obviously, it might be hard to find another one that has the entire team. So
yeah, right.
What I suggest there when you list it is start with an auction. You know, don't start with a set amount, buy it now. Do an auction so you can, you know, maybe get a bidding war going on it.
815 says, I have a desk from Chicago Public School back in the day when the desks were connected in the front and back to each other.
Yeah, those people are definitely using those, repurposing and not even repurposing, just grabbing them like they are and putting them in a room. You know, I noticed you guys have a desk in the green room.
That's very similar to that. Yeah, yeah. How much can I get for that desk?
Oh, that's good. I'll check that out, and maybe next Thursday we can work on something.
Yeah. Let's go to Carol. Carol's on the line. Carol, what do you got, Carol?
Hey, I got a flag pin from the gay games that were here in Chicago a few years ago, and also golf balls. Okay. I didn't know if there'd be any value to that.
Yeah.
Dom's got a Gatorade container, too.
Okay. Yeah, you, thanks, you know, girl. If it's from a few years ago, chances are it's online. You can probably find that. Otherwise, you know, try a sports collector. But the shops, you know, something like that, they're probably going to say, oh, it's not worth that much. So maybe just go online and check that out.
847 says, when Kerry Wood was in his prime, I bought a baseball autographed by him that came with a photo of him signing the ball. No wow. certificate of authenticity, though. Is it worth anything?
Well, at least you have the photo. That helps. You know, obviously, Kerry Wood holds pretty good value. And it's, you know, again, it's something you can check out. But it's great to keep the photo with that. And maybe, you know, if it's worth anything, maybe have it matted and mounted somehow to display it better. And then you'll get a little bit more money for that.
Let's go to John. John, what do you got, John?
Okay, well, I kind of got a question. You talk about medallions, and you talk about coins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And to be a coin, you're talking about legal tender of some right, country, right. correct? Okay. I got a medallion, and coins are worth something on how many was minted on them.
Right.
And it's rare, correct?
Yeah, the amount minted is definitely increases or decreases the okay. value.
Yeah. I got a 1 ounce gold 999 Jordan coin made by Highland Mint. They made 100 of them.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the gold.
What's that worth?
I couldn't give you the exact amount, but definitely you got gold involved there. You got Jordan. So you got, you know, a lot going for it. I would definitely have it checked out. And chances are you could bring it to like a coin or, you know, sports memorabilia place and have them check it out. But, you know, you'll probably get more money off or online rather for that than at a store.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks for that. Let's go to Brian. Brian, what do you got, Brian?
Okay. Like I said, 1984, I broke my leg. Okay. I got my cast on and I met Minnie Minosa and he was doing a show at Walgreens and everything, and he signed my cast.
Okay.
And,
that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
The next day or two, I went to the doctor and I had him cut that part off.
Okay.
Of my cast. I was just thinking what would be the value
of your cast.
Well, first off, I mean, it's something that personal happened. Would you want to keep it for yourself, maybe? Or maybe?
Yeah.
But just in case.
You know,
but everyone has their price. I understand. If it's worth, you know, right. if it's worth a lot, you wouldn't mind parting. I understand. Yeah, I mean, did you happen to get the picture with him? Or I mean, you have to have a picture of him signing it, but, you know, a picture with him?
No, but then there's another picture I have with Ernie Banks.
Oh, okay.
When
okay.
I had my cast on.
Okay. And he signed it as well, or no?
No, Ernie Banks did not.
Okay.
I did have my picture with Banks, and it was in Walgreens.
Oh, in the store itself? So, okay, you weren't in the hospital, I'm taking it.
Yeah. No, I was not in the hospital. But it was just really, because they had a big thing in Chicago where, you know, the players were coming around Minosa and
right.
Banks. And I just thought it was great, and I was... Like you said, I was all busted up with my leg, and Minosa signed
right.
it.
Right. Well, that's pretty cool. I just don't know, you know, what the market would be on that. I think it'd be something, you know,
thanks,
it
Brian.
Would mean more to you.
All right. Thanks, Brian. All right. Let's check out some texters. We've got 773, a metal Mickey Mouse thermos that came in the metal lunchbox from the 60s.
Yeah, though anything Disney, and especially thermoses, if he's got the whole, does he say he has the whole lunchbox and the thermos?
No,
or just
he
the
says
thermos?
A metal Mickey Mouse thermos that came in a metal lunchbox from the 60s,
okay,
so
yeah.
you have to interpret
yeah,
that,
yeah, if you just have the thermos, obviously that brings the value down, but if it's in great shape and from that era, you know, there can't be too many around, so you might, you know, want to look that up as well.
Well, Greg, another great night of my favorite night of the week, swap
yep.
meet. And thanks for all the callers that called in, 312-981-7200, and also the texters. We're going to cut it short because we're going to do a little update on Dallas. We'll see you next Thursday. Great job tonight as well. And thanks for bringing in all the the memorabilia. We'll see if you can get something for the Pocket Fisherman.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do with that. Thanks, Justin. Always fun.
You can find Greg at DuPagePicker at DuPagePicker on Twitter. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Coming up tonight, I believe Jen Bosworth's in tonight for Patty Vasquez. I saw that on Facebook, though. I should confirm at some point. Always like when Jen's here. 312-981-7200. We're following a fluid situation in Dallas, Texas tonight, where three police officers were shot and killed and 10 injured by two snipers. This is according to the police chief, David Brown, in the city of Dallas, Texas. This happened around a protest. It was a Black Lives Matter protest after the shootings of two African-Americans, one in Baton Rouge, one in the suburb of St. Paul. Protests have sparked up today in different cities. New York, Chicago blocked the expressway. In Dallas, they were protesting when I've heard different reports on this, snipers that were in full tech gear that had semi-automatic weapons were they up? That was the idea, and they were shooting down?
Yeah, they were elevated.
They were elevated, shooting down at police officers and a transit officer who were with the protesters. And as we just heard from the Dallas police chief and from Rob Martyr, who joined us at the bottom of the hour, 10 officers were shot and 3 were killed. Not a great night for the... for the country, obviously, and for Dallas, Texas. We'll continue our coverage of that. And you know, we have some people. ABC News is on the ground. Jim Ryan's there, so we'll talk. We'll figure it out throughout the night to bring you updated information. Because Dallas right now, it's a breaking news situation, and Dallas is essentially in lockdown. And I can understand why. Right now, police are holding press conferences. They're keeping reporters and people up to date. I believe if you go to some of the Dallas websites, news websites, they'll stream press conferences and that kind of stuff. Like I said, 3 officers killed, at least 7 others wounded by 2 snipers in Dallas. They're looking for that. This is. Let's go to ABC News' Jim Ryan, who does join us. He is in Dallas, Texas. Jim, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, really an unusual, tense, and bizarre situation here in downtown Dallas, Justin. Police are still looking, we're told, for 2 snipers who climbed into an elevated position, perhaps a parking garage here in downtown Dallas, during a demonstration, a peaceful demonstration that was happening earlier this evening. At about 9 o'clock, there were shots. People scrambled for safety. We're told now by the Dallas police chief and by Dallas Area Rapid Transit, the bus and train operator here that has its own police department, that 10 officers were wounded. We know that 3 of them have died. 3 of them are in critical condition and others are in undetermined condition, but are not thought to have life-threatening injury. So the long and short, Justin, a peaceful demonstration turns extremely violent. The violence apparently focused squarely on the police. 10 officers hurt. At least some of them with Dallas Area Rapid Transit, others Dallas City Police, and 3 of them have now died, Justin.
And Jim, and there's no word. I mean, the Dallas police chief said no suspects are in custody. These suspects are on the run.
Exactly, which adds sort of, I think, to the tension here in Dallas. There are still protesters on some street corners, but now they're just standing like everybody else and watching what's going on. Police are directing people around the area, trying to keep the streets closed,
right,
and maintain some sense of order here as this search is going on.
I mean, interesting. Yeah, to say that there's still protests on the street and they're trying to lock down Dallas, that's not a good situation for being able to control what's happening there.
Yeah. It becomes difficult to tell who might be an assailant or who's simply a peaceful demonstrator.
Mm-hmm. Jim Ryan, ABC News. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll check back with the newscast with Rob Martyr here on WGN. We appreciate some time, Jim.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks. There you have it. I mean, this is a, like I said, a fluid and breaking news situation. You know, it's never, obviously, you know, the information is out there because the police chief in Dallas was able to have a press conference and give this information. But the idea that the suspects are still on the lam, they're still on the run, is obviously makes it a fluid situation. I can't imagine that situation for authorities and for police, for protesters, for everybody involved. There's obviously, you know, the protest, a Black Lives Matter protest about the way that police have handled and had these shootings in both Baton Rouge and the suburb of St. Paul adds an extra element to this that it is quite possible, and it looks like police were targeted in Dallas, Texas. Two snipers reported in Dallas, Texas, shooting from an elevated position, shooting 10 officers in Dallas, Texas. Three of the officers have died, and three are in critical condition. I'm at a loss for words, and something that is a tragedy, and it's pretty intense. Rob, we pretty much got that up to speed. I'm not sure, you know, obviously coming up we'll recount everything at the top of the hour, mm-hmm. but I mean, this is something that came in. It says something that the Dallas police chief has already been able to talk to the press.
Yeah, they're in a command center, wherever that might be, in downtown Dallas. So he was able to give an updated account of what's going on there in Dallas right now. As you and Pete suggested, the snipers did shoot from an elevated position. They were concentrating at one point on a parking garage, and then their attention turned quickly to a building nearby, an office building. I think it's a Bank of America building nearby the parking garage as well. They were trying to clear people out of downtown hotels. Again, just kind of making a sweep of any of the buildings that they think could have been involved, or at least a perch for these snipers. So that's kind of the process that they're going through as far as the Dallas police are concerned right now.
I mean, just imagine that. I mean, you're involved in a protest. I don't know how many people were in the protest, you know, or still on the street. But the idea of locking down downtown Dallas to try and find the perpetrators, the suspects, while there's a protest going on, that can't be in an ideal situation.
Well, it's a needle in a haystack now. I mean, they're, you know, you never know. Obviously, you've got security cameras and everything everywhere, but you don't get that instantly. So have they ditched their equipment? Have they ditched the weapons? Are they mingled in now with the rest of the crowd? They just don't know.
A lot of stuff on Twitter, obviously. You know, as people, reporters and other people are counting in, you know, the Dallas Police Department tweeted out a picture of one of the suspects. You can look at that at the @DallasPoliceDepartment. I think it's @DallasPoliceDepartment, asking police to help find. It's a picture of the person that they suspect was involved.
They're saying now fourth police officer has died, so that brings that count up by one.
So, and I also read that 11 injured, so that there's adding one that was not a police officer, so I don't know what that Now, the question will be, the fallout will be, you know, and it's obvious with police officers, you know, shot en masse, if the goal was to shoot police officers, you know, and it seems like that would be the case. I mean, there will be some sort of analysis to that later at some time, but it would be inappropriate to suggest one way or the other that was the case. But obviously, the idea of having 10 police officers of the 11 shooting victims, now four police officers have perished, six police officers, or I believe, well, I'm assuming that means that the three that were in critical condition, one of the three perished?
That's a safe assumption, yes.
So to say now there's still two in critical condition.
Yes.
Not a good night in Dallas, Texas. Again, if you're just joining us, the Dallas police chief has spoken to the media. Four officers were killed tonight, at least seven others wounded at a Dallas, Texas protest as possibly two snipers from elevated positions opened up fire on a peaceful protest that was happening in downtown Dallas, Texas. We will continue to cover this story with Rob Martyr all night. Obviously, this is a big story. Jim Ryan's in Dallas, Texas. He just joined us just a minute ago to update. you know, there's a lot going on in this story. And like you said, it's fluid. It's developing. It's something that is far from over, especially since the suspects, the two sniper suspects, have not been caught. They're on the run. So something to obviously consider. And like I said, I mean, it might be, you know, obviously we're giving you as much information as we have in the moment. But I do suggest if you are online, you could follow the Dallas Police Department, which is doing a pretty impressive job of keeping people up to speed with technology. They're using Periscope and other things to document what the police chief is talking about, give information, including pictures of the suspects, and looking for help in any way possible from this heinous crime tonight in Dallas, Texas. Again, reports coming in that four police officers are now dead after shooting in Dallas, Texas. That's tough to handle for the country. You got something, Rob?
No, I was just going to say it seemed as though when the late afternoon and evening protests began here in Manhattan, Dallas, other cities I saw around the country, things seemed to be going pretty much according to script. There was the chanting, there was the shutting down of the Dan Ryan here earlier. The shutting down at 51st and Wentworth. But then, you know, those protests seemed to fizzle out for whatever reason in Dallas. You know, then it was kicked into high gear with these police officers being shot.
Yeah, and, you know, you're right. I mean, and I saw on Twitter not too long ago, and it's unofficial, but there were two arrests in Chicago. And those protests today, again, far from the violence that's taken place in Dallas, Texas, where 11 people, 10 police officers, were shot, four of which have now died, two of which are in critical condition. We'll get the the chief continues to update the situation and continue to give news on the situation. Like I said, the Dallas Police Department is being very communicative, both online and with updates. So everything from trying to get the numbers right to make sure that there's factual information that's out, all the way to, giving you more information about suspects and pictures and whether or not people can help in that case. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the news. Jen Bosworth's here. She's in for Patty Vasquez tonight. It's a download. Stay with us. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Joining me now in studio, Jen Bosworth. She's in for Patty Vasquez.
Hello.
Good to see you. How are you?
Nice to see you. I am well. I am well. I am, you know, like everybody, shaken up and sad. And I'm sure we'll be getting more updates. But I'm okay. I'm okay. Yeah. This is hard stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're in a good position where you got Rob Martyr, who's following the story. And Jim Ryan at ABC News has also checked in, and he's following the story. So WGN is has got your back in terms of understanding a breaking news situation. Just to update quickly, 11 officers shot, four dead, two snipers that were suspected to be wearing body armor, and there are suspects at large. Photos have been distributed by the Dallas Police Department. You can follow them at Dallas Police Department on Twitter, and they're also giving updates to the story. But again, a peaceful protest that goes terribly, terribly violent. Two snipers who were elevated, who were allegedly in body armor,
right,
that shot 10 to 11. I think it was 11 people, 10 officers. Yeah. Four have perished. Wow. Two are still in critical
condition. Yeah. Also, Justin, this just out as well. Dallas PD says the suspects threatened to plant a bomb as well. Hmm.
Well, that's not good.
No.
All right, Jen, what's on the show tonight?
So we are talking with some of the cast members from The Hairy Ape, which mm-hmm. is a new play, a remount of a play that Oracle did. And it's a fantastic play. It's really apropos. And it's something that basically tells us that there are no easy answers to this.
All right.
And we have that. And we also have Kelsey Huff,
yes,
who
I
you
love
know
Kelsey,
is coming
yeah.
on to ride sidecar a little
good.
Bit.
Good.
And we're talking water slides and stuff to do for summer and an Exotica convention.
All right.
So there you go.
All right. Well, there you go. Sounds like a blast. I'm sure you have a great show. Thanks, Jen. All right. Here's the news.